The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. Welcome back to the show. It's July 17th. Oh, summer. Did I mention my kids are almost going back to school? When I was a kid, if you recall, well, I grew up here, you were out in June and then back in like August. But I don't know. It's weird. They're out in May now and back in July. I don't care. The point is they're going back to school and I will get more done. Drinking the homebrew. Want to give a shout out to those who ran the ATL. You guys are my peeps. If you listen to this podcast and you do my race, I love you. Can I just say that right now? Yes, you that's listening. I love you. So my other job, as many of you know, is this obstacle stuff. Quick side note, just wrote an article for Runner's World. It's on my LinkedIn page and probably my Facebook and a bunch of other places. I wrote an article for Runner's World about obstacle racing. Yay me, little self-pluggeroo. And then as a lark, I created a race along with my friend Clayton called Run the ATL, where we run the Beltline and unfinished Beltline. So when we started in 2015, all there was that little 3 mile stretch from Piedmont Park to Icebox at Krog Street Market. Now, it extends beyond Krog Street Market, right, for a little jig-jog. And then you get on Euclid there, and then you go over to Krog Street, over to the tunnel, blah, blah, blah. And where I live on the west side, there's like 3 miles of pavement now as well. There's still plenty of adventure. So if you like to run on live train track and avoid crack houses and just want to see Atlanta in a way you never have, check out Run the ATL. That's runtheatl.com. But the point is, for those of you that do that race and listen to the show, I love you for reals. Speaking of people I love, first Patreon, Brett Mazarek, my old friend Brett. Brett, thank you. It means the world to me. You too can contribute to the Atlanta Podcast by going to patreon.com/theAtlantaPodcast, throwing a few bucks. It helps your boy, Matt. On today's program, Jonathan Silver, Lake House Coffee. Now, as you know, Lake House Coffee, a sponsor of this show, and how it worked was I met Jonathan. I really liked him. We became bros. We actually, believe it or not, had lunch yesterday. Yesterday we had lunch. But that's only a coincidence. Whatever that, you know what I'm trying to say, because it's been in the hopper forever, and I wanted to get his episode out. We became buddies. He decided to advertise, but that's not why I reached out initially. I reached out because he was a local business guy, and I like talking to local business guys. So let's jump into it right now. Jonathan Silver, Lake House Coffee, and my new buddy. Away we go.
Where did you grow up? I grew up here in Atlanta, Sandy Springs.
I'm guessing we might be around the same age. What year did you graduate high school?
83.
Okay, we are not the same age.
Right. I found the fountain of youth. No, I'm OWG. You know, that's what's so funny. A white guy.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
It is now because I'm starting. I've got this thing, and we're going to do OWG wear, which is it's sort of like satirical clothing line.
Right.
I don't know if it'll sell or not. I don't know if it's anything other than every time I say I'm OWG, I get a chuckle out of people. So I don't know. I don't know how cool it is to be an old white guy anymore.
Has it ever been cool?
That's probably not. That's why if I can get someone to buy something, then we've flipped the switch.
Where'd you go to high school?
Riverwood High School. Still around.
Yeah, I went to Wheeler High School, which is still around.
Yeah.
So I graduated in 1990.
Yeah.
So I'm a few years behind you.
Sure.
My school has gone through drastic changes, though. I don't know if you go back, they like rebuilt everything. Yeah. It's a whole nother world.
It's weird. My son is going to high school there in next year. He'll be in ninth grade. And the whole thing is completely different. And then by the time he graduates, they will have taken down all the buildings that we were in, and it'll be new. So good for him. And
so you've never left Sandy Springs?
It's really weird.
30328?
Yeah, yeah. I grew up in, and it's completely, I mean, it wasn't by design. Frankly, at the time, I wanted to live in town, and I couldn't afford a house in town. So I moved out and then got married, so you get married and your wife wants you to change the house you're in. So it became our house. And so interestingly enough, I actually moved, I'm like two neighborhoods over from where I grew up. And my first girlfriend in seventh grade, her parents actually own the land that my house is now on. So yeah, I'm kind of a homebody, homeboy, whatever.
Do you go to reunions?
I have. I didn't go to my last one. I mean, it's funny with all the social media. I don't even know if I need you need to do that anymore.
Here's the thing: when Facebook came to regular folks, it was like 2008, 2009, and that's right when I moved back to Georgia. So I reconnected with all these people, and I was like, "This is awesome!"
Right.
And like, we had a couple of little small meetups, and I went to lunch with a couple of people, and I was like, "Oh, I don't really want to see any of these people."
Yeah.
Like what I thought in 1990 was, I'm never going to go to reunions. I'll probably be friends still with these three or four people. And that turned out to be true. So there are three or four people that I've stayed in touch with through the years that I like, and I still don't see them that often. So I skipped every reunion. I finally went to 25, which was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I thought that was nice. I can now stay away from another 25.
Sure.
Like that's about how it went for me.
You know what? I feel like I'm totally fortunate in that. I mean, I still have more than a handful of people that I've grown up with. So, I mean, that I've still, it's from 5 years old. And I don't think a lot of people can say that. So, when you've got a core group of people that you, got in trouble with all the way through, and that's pretty cool. And so I've got high school, I went to high school with them. And then I've got some friends from college. Even I didn't go to my college reunion.
Did you go to UGA?
I went to Tulane.
Oh, okay. All right. So you broke the mold there.
Broke the mold.
Went all the way to Louisiana.
Yep.
Was that an eye-opening experience?
Because
you got away from some white people?
Yeah. It was an eye-opening. I don't know. I went there to become a doctor. And shortly after my freshman year, 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. chemistry, physics, and biology.
Fuck this.
Yeah. Cool. I can say the word fuck. Okay.
Yes. Clearly, you have not listened to this program a lot.
I'm kidding. But it was a great experience. And to me, too, New Orleans is the kind of town that, like, the fact that I've lived there, probably like you were talking about L.A., and she said, oh, it's an L.A. thing. If you've lived in New Orleans, and I can get around and not feel like a tourist. So
right.
that's, a positive. And going back to Jazz Fest and whatnot. So, it's a good experience.
So what did you graduate with?
A BS in psychology,
okay.
Which is, bullshit psychology. It's what my dad said, so what are you going to do now? Open up a psychology shop?
So what did you do?
Well, I actually went, I got a psych major thinking I was going to go into advertising and be a copywriter or something like that. And it was going to be my way to mind melt, I sort of ended up where I'm at now because my resume read like a calico quilt. I mean, I didn't really have anything that, said you're this or you are that. And, I think that's a better way to go. I mean, unless I want to be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor, I start to question college overall. I mean, short of the experience, seems like the return on, $250,000 may be better to just take that and go into business.
Well, for our people, right? Our generation, my generation, and you're a little bit older than me, it actually still had some value. I mean, sure, we all know people who graduated and ended up not doing anything with their degree. Right. But it's not like today where people take the, what do I fucking need college for? I'm gonna invent an app and be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Or billionaire, right? Like, it's a whole different world. Do you have to hire those people, by the way?
I've tried. I'm not real good at it. It's hard to keep them. But what I was going to say, what I think college really is about, aside from the experience, but it's about learning how to deal with adversity. Honestly, one of the things I feel like I took the best was I did not have a good grade. I think it was Spanish. And I needed a particular grade to graduate or to continue on with my degree. And I went day after day negotiating with this woman. And finally, I got what I needed and moved on. You know, I mean, can you do that in the real world? Yeah. But back then, you know, college wasn't really the real world. So, but it's interesting because, you know, I wonder how these kids are learned. I say kids, shit, I'm not that old. But, you know, how do you learn? And then how do you apply what you learn? And to your point, I mean, you can sit, or we were talking earlier, you know, you can sit on a computer, create something, and then release it. If it works, you know, you just grab the reins and hold on, it seems.
Did you always have this super loud, booming voice?
Yeah, it seems like it. I actually used to be on the radio at school and at Tulane, and you couldn't have a, you know, you couldn't sound Southern, you couldn't sound, you know, like you're from the North. So I guess I probably just kind of worked on it. And yeah, I think it scares the shit out of my kids. It scares the shit out of my mother-in-law. I know that. So
see, I wish it would scare my kids. It doesn't. I mean, it did to like maybe three. And after that, they just like, daddy's just making noise.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. My dad, I'm bigger than my dad is, but, and always, you know, I feel like, you know, he's, you know, he could still kick the shit out of me, even if he's 80 and I'm, you know, twice his size. But he too has a big voice, so I don't know.
Did you want to go into radio? Did you think that might be a path for you?
I wanted to go into music, and I wasn't smart enough to follow what my heart, you know, was pushing me towards. So, I was into photography, and I shot all of the concerts that came through, Tulane, and I'll never forget. So Frank Zappa came through, and so I got a pass, and I'm in the second row, and they said, okay, he only allows pictures after, you have to stop taking pictures after the second song. Okay, well, I'm in college, and I have a photo badge. I'm not going to fucking listen to what they tell me I've got to do.
Right.
So, and what I was, and you could push, you know, again, this is old film camera, you could, you know, push the you know, change how your aperture and shutter speed works. So the whole time I'm like, you know, I'm shooting pictures, and at some point a guard come, you know, I don't know, I say guard, I mean, whatever, the security comes over, and he goes, you got a camera? You know, I'm like, no. He goes, yes, you do. Come with me. I'm like, shit. So he pulls me out and we take the camera, and it happened to have been Frank Zappa's birthday. So they needed somebody to take a picture of him and his birthday cake, you know, in the back. And so I was given that opportunity, you know, and it is interesting because, like, I don't know, what do you say to Frank Zappa? I'm like, hey, man, that's really cool. He could have just said, fuck you, dude. You know, I mean, he didn't care. But that was kind of cool. So
do you have that picture somewhere?
I don't. Well, because I was shooting for the newspaper and I had to turn all my stuff in. So I actually went back to try to collect some of it, and, you know, who knows what they did with that stuff.
They don't have the archives anymore.
I mean, hopefully somebody has them, but I don't. I mean, I took a ton of really cool pictures that I certainly wish I had. And I shoot a lot now. And in fact, now I shoot a lot of sports and whatnot. So, and I have found that people are amazed at, how old are your kids?
10, 8, and 4.
So I don't know what they do for, you know, to be kids, but one of my kids plays sports, the other one's in theater. But I've been shooting sports for so long, and it's amazing how, like, to me, I get off on passing the pictures on to other people who don't get those kind of shots. And man, I mean, they're just excited. And that's to me, it's a great way to, you know, feel.
So that's like your, like, little...
That's like one of my hobbies, I guess. I mean, I have a fair amount of them.
But you don't want to make money with it.
It would be interesting. It's funny. I was on a trip to Maine, and I was on a boat with a doctor who was also shooting. And I said, "Well, what do you do with your photos?" And he said that he had hooked up with a gallery, and that if they were good enough, you know, he would print them and they would sell them. You know, I thought, I mean, I guess that was cool, but I don't know. I never tried to make money doing it. I mean, to me, that with digital, that's, again, it's just release it. You know, I mean, if somebody goes, "Hey, cool shot," then I'm happy.
Well, you can just throw it up on the internet then, right?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people will go through like iPhoto or any, you know, you can sell stock photos.
Right.
And so maybe one day I'll do that. You have to be organized to do that.
Well, and sort of just like anything else, be consistent with it. So I met a guy at like a press junket who's, you know, he's worked for... you know, Getty and the other one for years. And he says, you know, he gets a couple $100 a month from, you know, tiny, you know, 3 cents at a pop kind of thing, which, you know, I've learned, I feel like late in life that that's where it's at, right? Residual income.
Sure.
Like, I'm guessing you've been a salesman like your whole life.
Most of it.
So most of my life, like, I've been fucking humping, like, get the client. Okay, great, here's a check. And the move is, how do you get money to just come in? Yeah. No matter what, come in while you're sleeping, as they say. And I finally am getting little ones through some of my other businesses. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, you just need a bunch of these.
I'm writing it down. I'm taking notes. I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Residual income, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm into it. I probably have enough that I could do something with it. I got to figure that out.
But anyway, I'm just saying, like I feel like... and I feel like I automatically feel very kin to you, like for whatever reason, even though you're a little bit older, just because I feel like we're cut from that same cloth, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Like, so my dad's a salesman who I, of course, did not want to be like, right? And then I realized that all of those really great qualities come from him, okay? Someone asked me, like, if you were going to give, like, a business, like, quote, like, what's the best quote you've ever given? And my dad says, you don't ask, you don't get. And so I ask for pretty much everything, right?
Yep.
And that's a big thing to learn.
I always do ABP. There's ABC, always be closing. I'm ABP, always be promoting. You know, so, I mean, I'll freaking take these things everywhere. You know, I'll give you stickers. To me, again, that's the, you know, like, this is like a brainchild of something that came out. And I'm just always fascinated to see if people pay attention to what you do. And so I think I've actually tried to use, or I feel that if you can bring humor into something and somebody laughs, that means they had to hear it and process it, and then you get a reaction. Now, they might not think it's always funny, and they
right.
may,
but wait, you know, are you shooting the images for your Instagram?
No. I've got someone doing that. I put some stuff out there, but and again, that's a whole nother thing that maybe we can ask some of the people around here. Like, I don't know how that works, and I'm always amazed. I was at a function the other night, and somebody came up to me. They're like, "Hey, man, I really dig your photos." I'm like, "Okay, have you bought anything from us?" He goes, "No." I go, "Then what the fuck, man?" Meaning like. It, they are good, but you know, I think Instagram is about shots of food, cleavage, and you know, whatever else. So I wonder how you kind of you filter through all of that. But I don't shoot my own stuff.
Well, what if in 19 whatever, and I said, "Do you want to sell this on television?" And you'd said no, because people just sell soap. It's for soap operas. I mean,
yeah,
it's just like the worst example I can think of, but. Like, of course you're right and you're wrong, right? Of yeah. course that's what you remember from seeing. And I was someone who said Snapchat is for kids until I heard enough that I believed it. Like, if you want to be where the eyes and ears are, that's where you go.
Yeah.
And so I started going there, and guess what? Like, I got, you know, this word engagement. Now, converting that cocksucker, as we say, to quote Gary Lynn Ross, to the sale is another story.
Sure.
But to me, if what you've got a gift for comes naturally to you, why not use it? You enjoy taking photographs.
Yeah.
Why not be the guy that,
you know,
even if you're not the poster, even if you've got a person doing that, just being like, by the way, I'm always shooting this stuff around the office, in our warehouse, whatever you've got, and just pull from it once in a while because they're cool. And she or he will go, yeah, that's a cool image. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, again, a lot of the stuff that we've got is food shots. And, you know, I've just always felt funny being, especially if it's like one of my customers, you know, being in their restaurant shooting the food that they're putting in front of me. I don't know why. I mean, that's obviously it's done. I mean, shit, you know, new cameras now actually have a setting for, you know, food.
They do.
Yeah. Which is, well, it's obviously the lighting or whatnot. But, you know, maybe, I don't know. Shit, maybe I'll start. I just, you know, it's funny because the way I want to use those photos is to help promote my customers. And so if you're one of my customers, you're a chef, I want to go, hey, dude, go to our Instagram and see that I'm helping you. Like they posted a picture of a burger with, you know, cheese melting and onions and whatnot. And so somebody commented, they go, oh my God, that looks incredible. I haven't heard of this restaurant. I'm going to go order this hamburger. And I thought, well, shit, I mean, I need to let that customer know that I'm sending them business. And that's the value that you get when you use our products. Blue Durango Iced Tea, Lake House Coffee. That's my plug. And so that's how I think we would use Instagram, you know, to help you. Look, I'll go on and hopefully, you know, you and I'll take a picture and I'm going to put it on Instagram and you know, at, you know, Atlanta Podcast and hopefully people come, you know.
Right. Let's use that as a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anna David, who I'm not friends with per se, but I wanted to interview her. I interviewed her. Mm-hmm. After the interview, barely returned my texts, like just whatever. Like I asked her how her TED talk, nothing. Like, okay. A week later, the episode's out. Here's the episode. Or the episode's up. Doesn't even ask for a link. Isn't going to share it. Oh, well, that's life.
Right.
Right? It's a piece of content. It goes into the sure. ether. The guy from Yacht Rock shared my thing. And wouldn't you know, like there was a spike. I couldn't have predicted that just because Yacht Rock is popular.
Sure.
There's plenty of people who are popular, right?
Yep.
That don't share it, or there are plenty of people that are popular and do share it, but they don't share it right, or just for whatever reason that day it just died on the vine. So it's just, you know what I mean? For me, it's about creating the content and it's a fucking crapshoot on who's gonna,
sure.
right?
I also, I wrote an article that, and it is like, you have to be your own advocate. I mean, to your point, you know, I mean, if you're pushing her, you know, at least you went out there and you asked the question. I asked for something. So I had written this article and I called the site and I said, look, if you, you know, put this on your site and then I'll release it. And I said, the only reason, well, I don't give a shit if people read my article. I wasn't even going to put my name on it. But I said, if this helps you in any way to get, you know, people, parents, kids to your website, then hopefully it's worth it. So that's, you know, they put it out there. I put the link and I was amazed at how many people share that stuff. And again, I was walking somewhere. And
what was it a story on?
It was the close. So again, my kid has been playing baseball since he was three and I've been involved with him. I'd like to say I wasn't that dad. And sometimes I was that dad, and sometimes I fought to not be. But and so I was involved with him all the way
crazy
through.
Crazy sideline dad?
No, not crazy sideline dad, but animated sideline dad, I would think. I mean, that's like a nice way of saying, you know, I was not the biggest asshole at the field, but you know, I have a loud voice, so I'm certainly heard. It embarrassed my wife some, and probably upset my kid, but I feel like we have a pretty good relationship, you know. But so he had gone all the way through at this park from, you know, 3 to 14. And we got to the last game and he was in his last season and the coach had been removed from the team. So they needed someone. And since I'd been a coach for a while, they called. And so I asked my kid, listen, you got like a couple of games left. You know, if it's okay, I'll coach your team, you know, through the season. And we got to the very last game. He was on the mound pitching and I thought, oh my God, he's going to kill it. He's going to go out with a bang. I mean, this is a big moment for him. And he completely sucked and he knew he sucked. And, you know, afterwards, you know, he wasn't upset. I was probably, you know, more just disappointed for him for the moment. And we talked about it. I said, you know, goodbyes to the team. Thanks for letting me coach. And I looked over and my son was bawling. I mean, just crying and not crying because he was, you got to go read the article, but not crying because I did anything. He was crying because the moment was so huge for him, the sort of graduation, if you will, you know, moving on to the next level. And I never caught it. I mean, like, I just didn't realize how big a moment this was. So, I mean, literally he was on the mound. He's like bouncing the ball to the, you know, he just couldn't focus. And I had, the day ended and I went and got a car wash and I was thinking about this and I was stopped at a stop sign and it started to rain. I had just gotten the car washed and I started crying, tearing, we'll say. I'm like, fuck, this is an article. I mean, there's got to be something here. And I went home and started banging something out and it just kept writing itself. And so it was really the story of just a dad and his son and this trip through, you know, Little League sports and coming to an end. And, you know, I was amazed at how many, again, this was more cathartic for me, and I was like getting calls. I mean, you know, oh, dude, you know, you tugged on my heartstrings, or you just told my story, or so, you know, I mean, I like that stuff. And again, that to me is just sort of creating something and releasing it.
What's the name of the article?
It's a good question. If I could save time in a bottle.
Like the Jim Croce song.
Yeah, a little bit. So I don't even know if anybody got that. But
I'm sure people, listen, I'm sure anybody my age or older got that. And whose website did you put that on?
That was on the nyosports.org website, I think.
So, and what's NYO stand for?
Northside Youth Organization.
I think that's the one my son played flag football for, I think.
Maybe. In fact, they go baseball, football, basketball from age, you know, basically three all the way through.
Maybe I just looked it up.
It's in Buckhead.
Maybe it wasn't. I think it was one of the ones I was looking for. I was trying to find football for my kid. I think I found it, but it wasn't the one my kid ended up playing in.
You know, it's interesting. I had written, we had also played football and we had some magical seasons, and I had written other articles that again, it's really cool when you do something, again, that's for yourself. And I had written something, and one of the coaches was in the financial world, and he came up, he goes, Jonathan, I got to tell you, your article went all the way up to the head of Citibank.
That's great. I think
may have passed away since, but anyway, yeah, so that's a cool thing.
No, that's great. So we got to back up a little bit. Sure. What did you do right after college?
Who the fuck knows? That was a long time ago. Right after college, I had always had sort of an entrepreneurial spirit. During school or during college, we ran a car detailing company, which was sort of before, you know, now everything's fancy and whatnot. And part of our service was we'd go to your office, pick up your car, you know, drive it back, clean it, and then deliver it to you. That was certainly before insurance was a big deal. And if you had a Porsche, that made it even more fun. So, you know, hey, what kind of car do you have?
But you had that entrepreneurial spirit even then, you're saying? Because a lot of people don't necessarily have that.
Yeah, you know, if you go to our website, one of the stories I have on the site was, like, to me, Halloween was working time. What does that mean? So, you know, I'm sure if you lived here, you trick-or-treated, you had a big sack or pillowcase. And you filled it up. And I'd fill it up, go home, dump it, go back out, fill it up. So I had this, you know, huge bounty of, and inevitably we trade with my sister and I pick out what you wanted. Whatever was left, I would, you know, separate inventory basically, and then bring it to school over the next several days and sell it.
See, that's the fucking thing. I hate you because to me, that's what the entrepreneur was. And I never had that. I didn't figure out until I was this late in life, like the last 10 years, like, oh, this is the kind of person I am. I can't, like, I always knew I couldn't work for anybody. Yeah. Like, there's no way I can work for anybody, right? But I didn't have that gene to know, oh, you can do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did
it. You're the person that I talk about in podcasts when I talk about it. I'm like, yeah, I wasn't that kid that figured out how to flip fucking candy. You know what I mean? And I'm so envious.
Well, I don't know. It got me in a lot of trouble. But the cool thing was you get in trouble and then you go back, you know, and...
Dude, so that just reminds me though, speaking of which, because I have not told this story before, I went out, trick-or-treated, I came back, my buddy's older brother had just gotten back from whatever it was, football practice, business practice, whatever, and he's like, hey, I haven't gone out yet, would you go with me? So I went back out with him, and I would go, hey, I'm just getting another bag for my sister, right?
Right.
And this fucking bitch called my house and said, it's like, looking back on it, it's like, lady, A, of course I was lying. B, who cares?
Right. You know, the funny thing now is, and back then it used to see what kind of candy could you get. Now everybody goes to Costco, they get the same fucking big bag of candy. So every house has the same shit.
Right.
You know, and I would say that some of that entrepreneurial spirit's, you know, been killed because now if you want candy, your mom just, you know, or you go to Costco and you have it. You know, I mean, I wasn't a big candy person, which is probably why I figured I could sell it because I wasn't going to eat it anyway.
Right.
But, you know, it was, it's funny though, too, going to, you know, like a pretty, you know, white bread school. And I mean, we would be in the basement or this closed in area, you know, pitching quarters or, you know, for, you know, like gambling. I mean, we didn't do, you know, we weren't playing street craps, but, you know, we would pitch quarters or pennies or nickels until we got in trouble. So there was always some sort of gamble or some sort of, you know, game going on.
Right.
So
you get out of college and you're like, oh, we're going to detail cars.
Well, that was actually during college. I did that because my buddy was going to Europe for summer. summer abroad, and I'm like, well, I want to go to Amsterdam. That's what I wanted to do. So that was my way.
Take a lot of drugs.
That was my way of getting making enough money to, you know, take a trip to Europe for however many days. So, you know, hooked up with him, and then we traipsed around and whatnot. It was cool. But as far as what I did, like right after school, you know, I mean, I wanted to get into the music business. And then at some point I had this idea, which is my wife always kind of gets on me for this because, like I said, I've got this book of ideas, things that I've come up with. I always call them the $1 million idea. One was a lighter bag. It's like, well, what's a lighter bag? And I lived with a guy who was a smoker, and well, when you're, you know, single and people are coming through, they're smoking whatever, cigarettes, weed, and we'd always have a lighter. Well, you know what? You don't need the lighter until you need it.
Right.
And it pissed me off that somebody would always come and take these lighters. And so I got like, you know, beans and felt and a needle, and I made this like sort of squeezy, you know, plush thing that you could stick the lighter in, and it sat on the table. You could throw it, and it would, you know, it's balanced and stand up. And I figured, no one's gonna fucking take that. It's too big. You can't stick it in your pocket. So, you know, that was a great idea until, you know, everyone started vaping. Now, that was a long time ago. So, but you know, I've got a ton of those things. And one of the things that I wanted to do was a burger concept. So again, here I sound like, you know, ideas are, as my dad would always say, you know, it's not worth shit until you can get it on paper, and then you have to do something with the paper. But I had this burger idea, and I actually called it white. It was like white collar catering, meaning that, you know, there were all these office buildings going up, you know, as Atlanta was sort of going through this boom, and a lot of them didn't have cafes in them. So I thought, well, if I could do this rolling, and again, you know, now they have food trucks, you know, not, so this was again before food trucks, and it was before the whole burger craze. And I wanted to take them grilled, you know, burgers, vegetables, and nothing fried, but just a way to, you know, come out and get something great. And that was called Burger on the Spot. Well, consequently, that didn't happen. I even went to Georgia State and took some restaurant classes and whatnot to get that rolling. And so that didn't happen. Then I had another burger concept that I was going to actually do with someone. I'd already been in business here, so I had learned the restaurant business, and we were going to do a brick and mortar burger concept. And my wife was pregnant with our first kid at the time, and we had been going around, you know, just sampling different things and trying to come up with a name. And at this point, her boobs were enormous, which is also, you know, a positive. But she. we're sitting at the table, and she goes to eat an onion ring because we're going to have onion rings on the.
I can't wait for the payoff of this story, by the way.
And so she takes a bite, and a piece of the onion ring goes right between her cleavage.
Right.
And I go, God, that's one lucky onion. She goes, that's the name of the restaurant, the Lucky Onion. That never happened, but it's a great story. And I had already written the back of the menu. You know, it's like creating a T-shirt and telling yourself you're now in business. But so I tried to, you know, play around.
But what were you doing to make money during all this time?
So I had gotten involved with the folks at Mellow Mushroom, actually. And prior to that, I was, I said, Dad, I want to get in there. I want to open up this burger thing. He goes, you don't know shit about, you know, the restaurant business. What do you want to do? I told him about this hamburger thing. He goes, well, go get a job. So out of college, you know, my BS in psychology, my college diploma at this point, you know, hanging in my bathroom, because it didn't mean anything. I literally went to Fuddruckers and started making French fries. And I started learning, cutting buns, learning how to cook hamburgers. Every day after work, I'd pick the manager's brain. I looked how they set up everything in the walk-in. I mean, it was all cool, and it's a great story. If I had started there and built it up, it was always tough when I knew somebody that came into the restaurant. I'm like, you know, sticking my head literally in the fryer. But you know, it was funny because it was a great opportunity, and that's, I went from there to the Mellow Mushroom. But during that time, I was working at an advertising agency.
But see, what you just described is what I would call a smart way to do things, right?
Sure.
And I think that's missing. And I'm not going to use the word millennials because I don't believe it's a certain age of people. I think there's laziness at all ages, right? And there's hardworkingness at all ages. But this idea that like everybody wants to be Zuckerberg and Zuckerberg tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Instead of like, okay, I want to do X. Why don't I take an apprenticeship? Why don't I go learn this thing and get relationships and get contacts, right? Because all that stuff is super duper helpful.
Yeah.
And who knows, you might end up on some other path. But everyone's just like, no, I'm going to ask people for money and never actually really work. And then we're going to see in the next few years how that pans out as these people do have to, quote unquote, get a job, unless maybe some of their parents are going to support them until they're 50. I don't know. Because I think that's a pretty smart move. So who were you, or what were you doing in advertising?
So I'd taken an internship, and I would literally do everything, anything that needed to be done until I, you know, again, like you had made mention, you know, I'm asking, I'm like, let me get in on something. And I actually got my first tagline. It was for a race, and we had to put together a flyer that went in the bag. If you've ever done a road race, you know, you get a bunch of shit in the bag.
Not anymore, by the way.
All right.
It's the virtual race bag. They sent you an email with a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
That get used equally as much.
And so they had a dental client who wanted to put something in, and so I got my tagline of every runner deserves a dashing smile, and it got printed, and I was like, I think I still have one of them, you know, from, you know, 1900, you know, and I'd gotten the bug. And the other thing, though, you know, again, in advertising back then, it was still, you know, three martini lunch. I mean, this was, and I'm assuming I was not a part of it, but it was, you know, the three martini lunch and lines in the bathroom. And we went out to lunch one day, and I don't know, we were doing Jaeger shots. We did something, and I'll never forget the head of the agency. And I'm sitting at a little table sort of in the back corner, and I was so fucked up. I'm like passed out, like literally sitting there. That may have been a low point in the ad agency or in my ad career. But he's like, did you party a little too hard at lunch? I'm like, I'm just trying to keep up, sir. But it went from that to, again, trying to get into the music business. I took a job at a law firm that was big in the music industry. And again, when I say took a job, I mean, these are low paying. I did everything. I reorganized their files. I answered their phones. The lead attorney actually had it was kind of funny and maybe a little sad, but he had a nephew that needed a recommendation letter for college.
So you wrote it?
I wrote it. I didn't know the kid. I didn't know right. anything, but I got, you know, it was cool. So I handed it to him. He goes, hey, it looks pretty good. So I did that. In the meantime, trying to, how are we doing on the battery?
We're good. Great. I mean, it's going to die and then we'll stop.
I actually moved to New York to try to get into the music industry. And you're talking about sales. I mean, that's what I did. So it was to get into the promotion side of music, which essentially is the sales. And back then, you know, you went to a station and you, I don't even know if they have to push music like that now, you know, with all the other online outlets. But I learned it was a totally sleazy business. And I'd gotten a couple of interviews set up, and the guy said, look, you move up here, prove to me that you want to get in the business, you know, live on somebody's couch, whatever it is, and I'll get you a job. I'm like, Mom, Dad, I'm out of here. I'm heading to New York. And I lived on a couch and out of a cardboard box for, you know, close to a year. And I moved. I remember, you know, I couldn't stay with that guy anymore. I'd call a cab and put all my boxes in a place. And the beauty of that is, and if you've ever tried to watch TV without controlling the remote control for almost a year, it is very, very difficult. And I ended up on my cousin's floor on the Upper East Side. She watched the worst fucking television. I couldn't do anything. I mean, you know, here it was. I was just, you know, grabbing a futon, and but it was a great experience living in New York. And then I came back, and I at that point I was working in a golf shop up there, which is my other passion. I call it my second love, and I said it's my second love because I hadn't found my first love yet. And then I got married, and unfortunately, my first love and the second love seemed to battle each other for supremacy. But needless to say, I came back and I thought, well, I need to get a job. How can I do that? And I went and started caddying at a CEO type golf course. I figured, you know, if I'm going to get a job, I'm going to go meet somebody and, you know, hopefully they'll pull me along. So and that sort of ultimately led to the coffee business, which is, you know, where I'm at now. So that's sort of a nutshell. I may have left some things out, and as we continue to talk, I'll fill it in. That's kind of, I'm a little, you know, ADD, who isn't?
Well, I try to, I mean, again, like to live in a world where there's only one screen in the house and it's the television,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have the remote to it, right? That's, people don't understand the struggle is real, man.
Yeah.
When I first moved to LA, I went to my friend's couch And he was the only guy I knew. And I was like, he was like, how long did you stay? I'm like, I don't know, 3 weeks. And like, just never a thought passed those 3 weeks until like day 24 came. And his roommate is like, when are you getting out of here? I'm like, you know, go find someone else's fucking couch to sleep on. Yeah. Right. So I go sleep on this other guy's couch. And like, he came in, like, so they each had a room, these two guys, and I was on the couch. And he came in and was like at like 11 at night, and I was about to go to bed. And he had just gotten Taco Bell and he's going to watch TV. And I was like, hey man, I'm trying to go to bed. And he's like, fuck you, I'm watching TV.
No, it's hard. It's hard.
You're powerless.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Absolutely.
And you're like, fuck, this sucks.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel your pain, dude.
I mean, I remember I had a buddy who literally was going out of town for 2 weeks, and he said, I need someone to, you know, sit my cat. I go, I fucking hate cats.
But I'll do it.
But I need a place to live. So
right.
Packed up all my shit. He lived down on 42nd Street, like two blocks from the UN, which again was cool. I mean, it was, you know, I packed up my shit and I stayed in his place for, you know, a couple of weeks. And, you know, it was a great way to, you know, see Manhattan, just, you know, wandering.
So how did you said something about mellow mushrooms. So how did that, what happened there?
You know, you learn at it. And again, to me, they're all life lessons. And to your point about needing something immediate, I really, you know, it's like long division. I mean, you need the building blocks, you know, you need to have a foundation. And I learned early that if you're not the man, or at least have half of the man, you ain't shit. And so I went in to this, you know, with eyes wide open, thinking that, you know, here it is. This guy's going to bring me on and we're going to open up four or five of these. I mean, that was the goal. And
there was one mellow mushroom at the time?
No. But he had got at the time had the rights to like Cobb County, let's say.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were. So the first mellow mushroom, 1974, was in a little restaurant that's no longer there in Sandy Springs. And I grew up eating it and, it, you know, eating there. And it was just a cool thing to really be involved with something that I had
what
grown up with.
This?
Mellow Mushroom, I think we started in 74.
No, but so, where in the story?
Oh, where in the story? We're now in the early 80s.
Okay.
Early 90s.
Right. So real quick. So I lived in Sandy Springs off of, what's that road right there where the Chevron is? Is it Dalrymple or was Dalrymple off the road?
Yep, Dalrymple.
Uh-huh. So I lived right there.
Okay.
I used to walk to that grocery store. I forget what the fucking, it was a Kroger or what. And then do you remember the Cinema Draft House?
Yeah.
Like, this was like the greatest thing in the world.
Right.
This is before you could now eat food everywhere. This
sure.
was like the only place where you could watch a movie and drink beer and eat pizza. It was the coolest thing
ever. So I used to go to that theater before it was the Cinema Draft House. I mean, before, you know, that was sort of, I think, its last effort to, you know, try to remain a viable theater.
But really quickly, fast forward to, I moved back to Georgia in 2005, mm-hmm. and I'm visiting a friend, or six or seven, I honestly can't remember. I don't know about you, but years completely run together.
Absolutely.
I come back to Georgia, and I was visiting a friend in the area, and I go to that shopping center, and there was a Mexican restaurant where there was like a Mexican on TV, and I was like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
There was nothing but white people here.
Yeah. If you go back now, the whole place is vacant. I mean, it's just a dead center.
Los Angeles, half the restaurants are Mexican, but it's Los Angeles.
Sure.
I couldn't believe that in Atlanta, I was in a Spanish-speaking establishment.
Right.
It was freaking me the fuck out.
Yeah.
And when you go down Roswell Road in that area, it's always changed, like car dealers or Chick-fil-A's or whatever, but it's always been happening in some form or another. Now that section's completely empty.
If you're going north towards North Springs and Dalrymple and Roswell Road, yeah, that center is empty.
Because
I think it's probably owned by a family that's either arguing or trying to figure out what to do with it.
But I'm saying there's no apartment complexes every 2 feet?
Well,
that used to be the deal. It's like there's apartments all up and down.
Yeah. Now there's restaurants and car dealers. And I mean, there are apartments still up there. But I was just specific about that shopping center is vacant.
I'm just curious as to what we can get into another conversation another time. But
right.
I'm always kind of fascinated with socioeconomics and how it changes things.
Sure.
So let's take, for example, where we are right now, where this hipster food is the greatest thing since sliced bread and it's everywhere. But can it be? What will Krog Street Market be in 20 years?
Well, I think that, you know, unfortunately, the restaurant world is sort
you
of a cop.
Play with this cord, though.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
It's a copycat industry. I mean, right now, look, we're fortunate. We've had the success of Krog Street. We've had an overwhelming success at Ponce City. And then, you know, Avalon, which, you know, is sort of like Disney World. I mean, it's like a plastic. It's like, you know, we're just going to drop something down.
What's Avalon?
Dude, you got to get OTP. Avalon is a, you know, it's a huge sort of
Right. I almost said something, but forget it. Right. I was like, fuck OTP. I like it down here.
Yeah. No. Well, believe me, I'm in sales, so I'm all over the place. I mean, that's right. Just from a driving standpoint. So,
I've got customers up there. Sandy Springs is what my friend calls ATP, though.
What's that?
At the perimeter.
My first house was inside the perimeter, so I still got to say I was inside the perimeter, right across the street from Tiffany the Palm Reader. That was my landmark if you were coming over. And as my brother-in-law said, I had a stopper buyer. I mean, I'm literally right on Roswell Road. And so we're in ITP, and now I'm just right outside of the perimeter. But yeah, it is ATP. Anyway, so it's just, it's this huge live, work, play, divorcee Disneyland. I mean, it's like if you've got money and
I think I know it now. What are the restaurants on the bottom floors there?
There's a ton. Well, there's Oak and Coletta, which are the high end. You've got a Ford Fry restaurant. There's a host, but sure. It's also a ton of retail. I mean, everything from probably a J. Crew to.
Right. But all this fucking live, work, play, every 2 seconds around here, wherever you go in every direction, is more of these things going up. And again, in 20 years, is it going to be like, we like it better back in the suburbs after all? Like, I'm just curious to see what's going to happen with all this in town living air.
I think what's strange is this whole sort of, driverless car thing, solely because, you ever see the movie Fifth Element, which is...
Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
And what's her name?
Yeah. What's her name? The hot blonde. One of the hot blondes, probably. Right. Was that Daryl Hannah?
No. You're thinking of something completely different. But anyway, people are yelling it through their cars right now. That's what they do. And they text me. I'll get a random text 3 months from now with the name of the person we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, oh, that episode you did with the T-guy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because that's where you talk about like any of this immediate connection. I'm on a couple of strings, with different groups. And if you're not on top of it and you see something funny or something that pisses you off and you want to respond, it's like, well, shit, that was already like.
I'm having a problem connection. Let's try again in a little.
I picked up my phone and it accidentally did that.
But you can't respond because the timing is off. To your point. When am I going to go? Oh yeah, hey, nine comments ago, that was really funny. Or nine comments ago, you were such a fucking dick.
I'm in a group. Me and these three guys who affectionately call ourselves the ruling class.
Yeah.
Because we just fucking shit on everybody pretty much.
Sure.
And I go to bed. I turn my phone off at like 7. So I can wake up to 86 messages, right? And it's a lot to catch up on, right?
Right.
Here's a new thing I don't like. In texts, someone can like a comment or laugh at it. And so you just get the emoji and you go, what was that? And you have to look way back.
I can't figure out who said it.
Stop doing that, people. Just say something. Just say, haha, LOL. Don't like a comment.
Dude, it's too easy because now all you do is push them.
It's not like Facebook where the whole thing is visual. It's a scrolling thing and it's bullshit.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. So let's change those things.
Yes. I digress.
First of all, I just want to say, I hope you and I can continue talking after this because I really like you. I think you're a funny guy. So I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
You seem like a decent human being.
I try.
You never know how it goes with these things. Sometimes I talk to the people afterwards, sometimes I never talk to people again. So it's just, it's a weird.
Well, I will tell you, I have truly enjoyed listening to, and it's hard for me to sit for an hour and catch a whole thing, but I have listened to several of the podcasts. So, I mean, certainly I wish you the best of success as it continues because it is enjoyable. It's just, again, it's like, I don't know where we... So I grew up listening to albums, and we talk about this. I got a buddy who's, obviously he's gone solely back to LP, solely back to vinyl. And the cool thing is once you put it on, you kind of let it have to go. And then you have to get up and turn it over. So there's, some interaction. And I'm like... The only person I know that can really listen to a full album and we can have a discussion about it is I got a buddy who's a surgeon in Manhattan, and he listens to albums all the time while he's operating. So it's so hard now because my kid doesn't even know what a fucking album is, let alone a cassette.
So I just visited a friend in LA who has a few bucks and who has the room that I would have if I had a few bucks.
Yeah.
Right? And his girlfriend's out of town. So he's like, oh, I just got that. Like, you want, and like, we put like, he's like, what do you want to hear? I'm like, I don't know. Let's put on The Who. We put on Quadrophenia.
Great. Literally one of the greatest albums of all time, right? I think.
He was not a Who guy per se, right? So we just put it on and we sat there. And there's that long.
By the way, that just makes us now kin. To mention that album. So
I put it on and there's that long lead up, the, all good.
The waves, yeah, yeah.
Right, the waves and everything. And he goes, when did it start? I'm like, just give it a second, right? And then that first, like, doom, 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 and this fucking bass comes through. And I'm like, oh, I'm like 13 again.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, I can't, I like, for just 5 minutes, we just sat there and smiled at the different riffs. And I was like, this is like what dudes do,
sure. Right?
And I'm like, now I kind of have a goal. Like, all right, I got to get that now. Like, I really had given up on the man cave dream.
Yeah.
And this isn't even a man cave. This is just a cool study.
Right.
But yeah, because that whole, just what you described, the ritual, you get up, you flip the record, you look at the artwork, you read the lyrics. I mean, we sound like two fucking old guys, but I don't care.
OWG. And now you need some.
But I am Jewish, though, so I
get Well, so am I.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And see, that, to me, old white guys are waspy.
Well.
Wait, what's your last name? Not that it matters.
Silver.
Okay. You're Jonathan Silver.
I am Jonathan Silver.
Okay.
At least last time I checked.
Right. What's your Hebrew name?
Benjamin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, my middle name is, that's my middle name, basically.
Yeah. Well, it'd be, if we were talking, it would be Yonatan as Jonathan, but as right. You're given a Hebrew name for, you know, somebody who's passed away.
Right. Whatever. Well, you can pick your own if you convert. My wife picked her own.
Gotcha.
Right. Well, actually, no, we picked ours for our kids. We did pick ours for our kids. Don't ask me what they are.
Right.
So did you go to Hebrew school?
I did go to Hebrew school.
Where did you go?
Well, I went to a Jewish day school for a period of time until I was graciously asked to leave. I had, and again, this was
for selling candy.
No, that was before selling candy.
They should reward you.
Right. Well, you know what? You know it's time to leave when
you're a young man. You're learning how to learn the trade. It's great.
You know, the problem was I actually had a chair with my name on it in the principal's office.
So, literally.
And I was aggressive as a kid. I don't know why and where it came from, but I had a penchant for fighting. They asked me to leave. I went to public school. Second day of public school, I get into a fight with a bully, with the school bully. And, that's how I started my public school career and continued on. I hardly call myself a pacifist, but,
did you win that fight?
You know, it's funny. We both ended up sitting next to each other in the principal's office, so I don't know that there's a winner or a loser.
Right.
But I was asked to carry the balls in from PE, and he came by and knocked them out of my hand, and that was
he all. Deserved to get his.
I had a short trigger back then. Now it's drinking, drugs, and stress. I just it's easier to be a little chill. Anyway, yeah. So I went to I did go to day school, but
so I went to Congregation Etzchaim there,
mm-hmm.
right there in Marietta. That's actually why we moved to Marietta, was because my mom wanted us to go, and I ended up being the only one to go. But because we first moved to Georgia, we lived in fucking Ackworth.
Yeah.
And then we moved to.
Yeah, you lived in Ackworth. You were like one of two Jewish families in the entire place, probably.
No, they didn't know what to. They were like, "Wear your horns."
Yeah.
I think they still think that in Ackworth.
No.
Sorry, Ackworth listeners. I don't think I have a lot of Ackworth listeners, but they're probably there.
Right. My kids actually go, and one likes it and one doesn't really like it. But, you know, and we're not a religious family, but I do believe in heritage and in history. And I think that it's easier for someone to give that to them than me. So, but nonetheless, I don't remember where we started talking. Quadrophenia, actually. So there was one of these things, and it's, I don't do a ton on Facebook, but somebody had just put out a name top 10 albums of all time, or your top 10, or your top 10 listening albums. I wrote one and then wrote a sort of a little expose on the album. The one I chose was Let It Bleed, Rolling Stones. To me, it's a great album. But it sparked a lot of good conversation.
Better than Exile?
Well, I had to choose one, and the reason why, and I wrote something, and the reason why I chose that and wrote it was because my first listen, obviously, that came out in 1969, so obviously I wasn't, jamming to the Stones at age four, but although I do remember watching the movie Yellow Submarine, and back then it had actually come out on TV, and for whatever reason it scared the shit out of me. The Blue Meanies and the whole thing, where I was a bit scarred, but... that Facebook thing really sparked a lot to me, a lot of good conversation, music conversation. And so consequently now I'll call up a buddy. I'm like, I need an album to listen to, it created some good repartee. And I made the comment, I go, dude, Quadrophenia isn't on anybody's list. I go, I think that's, gotta be one of the best albums. And he's like, oh, you know, my buddy who's a music guy also, he's like, ah, he starts bitching and moaning. I'm like, no, dude, put it on and listen all the way through. It is truly a story. And then it goes back to now, you know, my son who, you know, he's like, oh, well, Logic's new album just dropped. I'm like, cool, what's the name of it? I don't know, Logic's new album. I'm like, well, can you tell me what the cover looks like? You know what I mean? They don't know shit. They listen to one song or they download one song and that's it. I've collected music all my life. I've got hundreds of albums. I've got thousands of CDs. I've got, I don't know, 70,000, you know, digital. And I don't collect it for me. I really collected it for my kids because at some point, again, going back to Long Division, you got to know where all of this came from. It's like, dude, I've got a huge blues collection. I mean, it sort of started here and moves on. And at some point, I hope that, you know, they get it. And so last year I walked into my son's room, he's finishing his homework. I go, look, man, you got to listen to this song. And I put on Wish You Were Here, you know, and it's this long intro. It's boom, 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 boom. You know, he's like, Dad. I'm like, wait. And, you know, it's just this long. He goes, Dad. I go, you know what, son? I'm not going to make you listen to the whole thing. But when you're in college, you go, I remember when my dad sat in the room. So they just don't get it because,
Now I want to know what else is in your top 10.
Quadrophenia would certainly be there. I think the Lou Reed New York album, I look at it, it's like in terms of an album that's in the collection, it's Drop the Needle and Listen all the way through.
Right.
Although New York came out as a CD, but I mean, that is a full story, listen all the way through, great music. I like Dave Matthews as a song, but it's hard for me to listen to an album all the way through because it starts to have a little bit of sameness. I mean, there's a little bit of repetition. So, to me, it's get something that is just different. It's engaging. It's, you know, keeps you enthralled. You can pick any Tom Petty album. Wild Flowers is a good one. I'll tell you that actually.
I would put Full Moon Fever above that.
Yeah, I was going to say,
in terms of his newer stuff, but to me, everybody's newer stuff is like 88 to like 2000.
Yeah.
Even though these people continue to make music. So like, I'm a big Elvis Costello fan, right?
Right.
And I just discovered iTunes, like literally like this year discovered that like I could have anything in my phone just by paying $10 a month.
Sure.
So I put in Elvis Costello and I have to keep scrolling to like have the albums that I last bought. Like, right. He's put out like 20 albums.
Sure.
I last bought Brutal Youth in 1995.
No, you got to go back further. I have issues with him politically, as I have issues with Roger Waters politically.
But obviously I know his stuff from the 70s, right?
Sure.
But I'm like, oh, well, I listened to like his more recent stuff. It's like, no, I haven't. He's put out, McCartney's put out like 10 albums I've never heard one song of, yeah. Even though I'm this huge McCartney fan, because I stopped buying music in, you know, 1990 or 2001.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't like the fact that I've sort of stopped. I mean, so if you go back and read my little thing on Facebook about Let It Bleed, it was the days of go. In fact, let's talk about first jobs. So when I could drive, my parents said, you need a job. So my first job was, I was a gopher at a law firm. So again, when I talk about my past, reads like a calico quilt. I mean, I'm all over the place. So I was a gopher in a law firm, and it was great, and you learn a lot, and you get to, you know, have to dress up and all that shit because I could drive now, and I needed gas money. My next job was Turtles Records and Tapes.
Oh, dude. So can we have a moment of silence for Turtles Records and Tapes?
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, the blue cup that I gave you, which is a hard plastic cup, was because people still use the big Turtles tumblers. They're either orange or green, and they had the, you know, because you don't throw them away. They're fucking hard.
In a box of old crap, which I got rid of a lot of my old crap. My wife convinced me 2 years ago, and I still curse her to this day because I'm not a hoarder by any means, but I do go through those boxes every couple years, and it's super fucking cool.
Yeah.
I know I've got one of those Turtles books, right?
Yeah.
So tell everybody.
Everybody's got to say, you know, there is a Turtles Records and Tapes Facebook, you know, old previous employer thing on. And so that was my...
But tell everybody what the Turtles little book was.
Well, it was like food stamps for music,
right?
Basically. You know, you got stamps every time you paid a dollar and you filled up a book and you got $5 or $10 off of an album or what. And I'll tell you, I use what I learned there today in my warehouse, which is I first, you know, came on and they're like, okay, you need to catalog. Catalog, what's that? Well, it was a fucking three-ring binder, you know, bigger than the Manhattan phone book. And I had to go, you flip the page and you went through and you counted A through Z rock, you know, A through Z classical, because then if you came in and you said, yeah, I'm looking for such and such an album, you know, I would go, oh yeah, it's right over here. So now if you come and you're working in our warehouse, I'm like, look, here's the inventory sheet. I want you to go through and count everything. It's not huge, but I mean, and that way you'll know where everything is, or at least where it should be. Again, building blocks. That's, to me, the only
but
way.
But now you just reminded me that I stole some tapes from there, and now I probably got to make an amends somehow, but I can't because...
Well, I tell you what, I know the family who started, in fact, the daughter married, you know, my very good friend, who's now talking about albums and what with. So yeah, I grew up with a family, I always say I love the story. So I, you know, it's like I lost my virginity to the manager at Turtles, or the assistant manager. I don't know if I'd gotten up that high yet. I couldn't fuck the manager. I had to fuck the assistant manager. So,
I would put this, if I was filming this, that would go in a little Instagram story, that line right there. So unfortunately, we did not video record that.
But at that time though, I was the coolest because I was hanging out with guys that were in rock bands. You know, I mean, like, I remember there was a guy named Dave, and Dave was a drummer in a rock band, and he had a big orange van, like with the jacked up mag wheels and a little round window in the back. And he had a fucking afro that made Boom Boom Washington on, well, you know, put him to shame. I mean, and he was a cool guy, beard. And because back then, if you were in a band, that's where you worked. You worked in a record store. So, but it was cool. And so going back, so I don't know, another album, Fables. I like the Fables of the REM album. I think that's a good, you know, drop the needle and play all the way through. But I mean, look, that's the thing. So in this little thing I wrote on Facebook, it's like the days of going to a store, coming back with a cardboard sleeve, you know, carefully opening up the plastic and then dropping it and reading. You know, I mean, that's gone. I mean, we spent hours and hours in my room listening to Beatles albums.
But it's not gone as long as there are enough of us out there, and there is, who have these conversations, right? And I think there are our kids and our whatever. There's like, it's not completely dead. It's going to be a long time before it's gone, before there's only like, oh man, you have records. Because it, again, people our age, especially with means, right? Mm-hmm. They buy the record player, they create the basement, and they make cool stuff. I don't think it's totally...
Well, like to your point, I mean, I don't, you know, my kid calls me a hoarder, but I mean, I'm not, because I mean, I've saved all these albums. I mean, and it's funny because my parents were redoing the upstairs of their house. Why? I don't know. Nobody lives there, but you know, my mom needs a project. And she's like, I need you to come over and move your stuff, so the painters or whatever. And I mean, again, I'm like, holy shit, look at this album. I mean, like, I hadn't, you know, you start going through. I've got the Some Girls album, if you remember, the original Some Girls album.
It had the sleeve thing?
It had the sleeve, but it had pictures of Marilyn Monroe and other people that they hadn't gotten the rights to use. So they quickly had to change the album cover.
Oh, so you've got the original.
So, yeah, I've got the original. I've got some pretty decent, some good old Beatles stuff that and then the other thing, my very first warehouse was on 11th Street, and it was basically a room the size of this little conference room we're sitting in, and in the back of the space was a squatter. He was a squatter, and he was an old sort of hippie dude. Now, why the owner didn't get rid of him, I don't know, but he was a squatter. He literally lived in this warehouse, and he had a little loft that he had built. And the landlord said, well, you need to collect money for, you know, rent or power or whatever it is that you're paying for and he's using. So I'd go, well, hey, dude, I need, you know, a couple of bucks. I don't have it, man. Well, eventually I got tired of asking, and his, you know, total got up. And I said, well, let me go see what he's got up here. And the guy had an unbelievable record collection. And I'm like, look, you know what? I'm just going to fucking take a big handful of these every time he doesn't pay. I'll keep them. I mean, I'm not going to take them, but I'm going to say, hey, dude, I got your albums. When you pay me, I'll give your albums back.
Right.
Well, consequently, that never happened, and I must have moved on, because now in my basement, I've got some killer old albums that, you know, I've just moved, you know, as I've moved around. So, you know, yeah, I love the LP thing, and I was into the Dead for a while, so I've got a ton of these. And it's really funny because...
Keep going. As you've gotten older.
As you've gotten older, he did a bit on, you know, I've just become prejudiced. Not against people, but against things, you know, and that's sort of... maybe that's sort of the OWG. You know, you just, you look at things differently and you're like, you know, it could be OWG, WTF. But, you know, anyway. So I see you picked up one of those boxes. That's a great lead-in.
We'll get to that. I was going to say, so I, you know, those albums that you talked about, you know, that my sisters had, you know, the Led Zeppelin albums that, like, you know, you could open the thing,
yeah, and
the
Physical Graffiti.
Physical Graffiti and the one with the, what was the spinning one? Was that three?
It was three.
And then the other albums my parents had were comedy albums. So Bill Cosby Revenge.
I was going to say, all my old comedy albums came from my dad. So, yeah.
And Carlin and Bob Newhart, and I was a stand-up, that's why I was in LA. I was stand-up for like 10 years.
Oh, really? Cool.
That's a direct correlation to hearing those young and something happening. Like, I can't tell you what it was.
The chicken heart, I don't know if you remember the Bill Cosby thing called the chicken heart, but what I just always loved was he would tap on the microphone. Like, I thought that was like, he's like, boom, boom. And it made like this heartbeat sound. I was like, oh my God, how cool is that?
Right.
And it's funny because, so the punchline, which it was in Sandy Springs for, you know, years and years. I don't know if that rings a bell to you or not.
Yes,
but
I performed there a few times.
Oh, did you really? So I had... they had an open mic night. And I'm like, guys, I'm going. And I didn't necessarily had bits, but my dad is a joke master, and I always grew up reading joke books.
Right.
I'm like, I've got jokes. I don't care if they're, you know, why the chicken crossed the road type things, but I mean, I'm going to get up.
Street jokes, as we say.
Yeah, and I'm going to fucking perform.
Right.
I had on, like, crazy saddled shoes, like tan and blue, and, you know, probably back then a thin tie, you know, with a little keyboard or something. Who knows? I mean, you know, it was definitely in the 80s. And I get up there and fucking nervous as shit, and I'm young, and I go to sign up. They go, how old are you? And I'm like, I don't, you know, go, maybe 16, maybe I'm 17. They go, sorry, you're not old. And I think you probably had to be 18, dude.
Right.
I was so deflated, but they let me stay and listen to the, you know, the acts that night. So right. That was my one shot at getting up on stage trying to do stand up. But anyway, so that's cool. So you've 10 years you did stand up?
Yeah, it's all I wanted. It's all I cared about. That's what I like. That was it for me. And then there's a whole, you know,
there's a whole nother podcast on,
right. And I've covered some of it in some other shows. That's why I'm not going to go into. But like, I've had comics, and we've talked a lot about that stuff. But
yeah, Patton Oswalt.
Well, I didn't talk to him very long, but I've had comics that I've actually sat with for an hour who are not nearly as famous as Patton Oswalt. But I can tell you that I definitely, like, talk about what you learn. Like, nobody's, like, nothing can, like, I can walk into any room or any sales pitch or whatever, and nothing is as scary as doing stand-up, that's for sure. And it teaches you to think quick on your feet. And there's just so many great, you know, lessons that sort of carry over, right?
Yeah.
Like, I certainly couldn't do this if I hadn't have done that, right?
If somebody asked me what would be a business, you know, when I started my business, I actually wrote down, you know, like 25 things, just, you know, little, there used to be the little Life's Little Instructional Handbook or, you know, any of these kind of short reads, but I came up with a list, and any new hire, I would sit and I'd read through every one of them. And I mean, some were sort of funny and some were not, but if somebody said, well, what would be like a business thing that you would recommend anyone? I mean, take an improv course. I mean, that to me, you can't take that information or knowledge and not use it with whatever you do. And so my kid's looking you know, going to high school, and now at high school you get electives. I mean, shit, when I went to school, you said, this is where you go and this is what you do.
They call them specials where my kids go to school.
And one of them was like acting one. He's like, no. I go, dude, you don't understand. I don't care if you want to be an actor. My youngest son is way into it and great stories about his acting stuff. But I'm like, son, you don't understand, man. This is just so you get up in front of someone and you don't go blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, like, you fucking learn how to talk. You learn how to make eye contact and enunciate. And to my point earlier about humor, I mean, if I'm making a sales pitch and I don't make somebody laugh in that sales pitch, and I don't mean belly laugh, but kind of, then I haven't probably got my message across. I mean, that's my whole thing. So I mean, I'm excited to maybe off record you'll tell me about being a stand-up. But I mean, I think that's awesome. I mean, I think it's very cool. And we too. I mean, we knew every line of every Steve Martin album, every line of the Robin Williams albums, the Richard Pryor albums were always racy, and I can't repeat it. But that was, I mean, that they were fucking awesome.
Well,
I mean,
my parents didn't have Carlin albums, but I watched Carlin on HBO. And then I started to buy his tapes, yeah. right? Because by then, like, tapes were more in the thing.
Yeah.
And I was just, like, just fucking mesmerized, dude. Carlin is still my hero. I got to meet him for 2 seconds once. It was awesome. I honestly thought I can die now. Like, if I met McCartney after this, like, that'd be it to get higher
sure.
on the hero ranking.
Well, when you were younger, if you could repeat the 7 words you can't say on TV, I mean, you were, you know, it's like, Mom, you know, Meatloaf. No, that was, I'm saying that because it echoes in this room. Right. But
that's the toilet flush behind you that you often hear.
But I mean, when you could repeat that and it wasn't like I was making it up, I'm like, it's a bit, Mom. You know, that was the greatest, you know, that was...
Right. I remember so Eddie Murphy Raw was the one that came out in the theaters.
Sure.
The one before that, it had two different names. I remember the tape. I think the tape was Delirious and the special was Comedian or vice versa.
Well, one he had the red leather suit and one he had the black leather suit.
The red leather was Raw, which, by the way, still holds up. Like, I went back and listened to that a few years ago and it's still amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, like, my grandmother was staying with us. So I was sitting this, like, literally, like, this close to the television, all the way quiet, so I could hear this, like, Eddie Murphy stuff, because I knew it was going to be, like, absolutely filthy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I, like, it's a whole other conversation. But, like, you know, there are so many stand-up specials on Netflix, and I will watch the 30-second preview and be like, nope, not even close.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I can watch, like, Dave Chappelle, right? Louis C.K., that's about it. Like, for, like, Chris Rock's new special is good. Other than that. Well,
Chris Rock is also very funny. I mean, I like what I, you know, the observational comedy.
Have you listened to his latest one, though?
I don't know. Probably not.
Okay,
I mean,
so it just came out.
Oh, well, then no.
And it's called Tambourine. I was going to say Banjo. It's called Tambourine. You should listen to it. Because it's definitely for guys our age that have been married a long time. It's really good.
Yeah. How long have you been married?
Probably not nearly as long as you. Are you laughing because it takes me a minute to think about?
Because
once it's past like 5, you have no idea.
Yeah. Well, my wife's in the jewelry business, so her big thing is, you know, engagement rings and anniversaries and whatnot.
So we got married on New Year's Eve in 2005. So we just had number 12.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just had number 12.
Okay. So I got married. I was 36. So I mean, I'm just a little ahead of you. The interesting thing, and I'm not going into anything about my marriage except that our marriage was November 2001, early November 2001, September 11th. You know, obviously, you know, a devastating day. My wedding was the first time that a lot of people ever came out of their house. Wow. I mean, it was really, and I will tell you, it was a fucking blowout for that very reason. I mean, we had people actually cancel, and we had people cancel their flight and drive. I got my wife's in Florida. So, I mean, they were not going on a plane, and you couldn't believe this sort of just outpouring of emotion, you know, because literally, I mean, you know, you're stuck to your TV and now you're afraid, and you went to this thing and it was awesome. It was really a great
of
event.
Of your friends that got married, like around the time you have, how many are still married?
A good bit of them are still married. I mean, you know, it's not fair for me to say that they're happily married, but they're, look, you know, that's honest to God. I'd say that's the hardest fucking thing I've ever done or ever continue to do. It's just, you know, I mean, like I said, you're living with somebody else. And so, you know, someone else is going to like, and they're like, oh, Silver, you're such a pussy. It's easy. And, you know,
nobody thinks that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying that just in case my wife listens.
But if you listen to Anna, like that came up, right?
Yeah.
That she's like, what do you mean? Like she was, I said it on the thing, like her eyes were lighting up because like, it's like, to the, you know, in the land of the blind, the one I made is king. She couldn't believe this, like, wisdom coming out of my mouth because she's not successfully married.
Right.
But, like, yeah, if you think for a second that, you know, the honeymoon phase of 2 to 5 years over, you're not going to fucking hate that person.
Yeah.
Right? Or well, we're not attracted to each other anymore. Well, no shit. You got to figure that out. Of course you're not going to be like when you fucking just met and she's blowing you in the car, right?
Well, here's what I said.
Marriage is figuring, you know, how to fucking stay together with a person.
What I don't understand is if I say to my wife, I mean, you know, let's make love, honey. You know, or how about let's just fuck on the couch. The kids are in the basement. She goes, oh, come on, Jonathan. I'm like, look, you should be excited that I am still physically attracted to you. And I don't mean still, but I mean, you know, like this is what I want to do because I enjoy being close with you and I enjoy being intimate with you. And, you know, she'll send me these texts like, can't we just go on a date? I'm like, how about we just fuck in the closet? I mean, that's good enough for me. Like,
right. I mean, but you know as well as I do that you need some of both.
Yeah, you do, right? Need some of both.
Because Sometimes they do want to be taken, like, on the nice date. Sometimes they want to be fucked in the closet. And So our job, I think, is just to show up and, you know, like, give as much as possible, be the best version of you can be, and then sometimes they're going to say no.
Here's the problem
with fucking. They're going to say no a lot.
Right. Here's the problem with fucking in the closet, because that did happen not too long ago, and my 11-year-old's banging on the door. She's like, we should stop. I'm like, no, we're not. Leo, go away. It's really hard and it's really fun. I mean, you know, we still laugh a lot. I will tell you, you know, my wife is funny. And,
that's,
you know,
important.
Yeah, it's probably the reason why, you know, we got married. Not, I mean, she's you know, attractive and baby, you're the prettiest.
She gonna listen to this or not?
I hope, yeah. No, she is funny. And if you're not funny, then I couldn't stay. I mean, it's just not the way I'm wired.
Right.
And I mean, you know, we laugh a lot, and she's sarcastic, and she's and I'm dry, and you know, sometimes it bothers her, but I can't help it. I mean, you know,
my wife says to me, "Are you kidding?" And I've said to her since like we first dated, "If you have to ask me, I am." And so when she asks me now, I just look at her, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, how many times are you still gonna? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are you kidding right now? Like, that's like one of her, like, she says that to me all the time.
Yeah. Well, my wife is like, well, I'm not your sister, you know, because she thinks that it's almost like too casual, you know, the banter.
Right.
I'm like, well, yeah, but if you're my best friend, I mean, you know, if you and I are hanging out and we're giving each other shit, that means I like you. I mean, that's right.
We were dating like 6 months. We went through this period with like, wow, we do an awful lot of joking, kind of cutting each other. What if we tried not to do that? And we did it for like 2 days, and it was like, this is just not us.
right?
Yeah. Like, this is just not real.
Yeah.
And I think there can be a line of like, you know, like obviously like taking the piss out of life or things or people. There is a place where it's like, okay, I'm just focusing on the negative too much. I got to back off a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, absolutely. If my wife wasn't funny, I would not be with her. And if I didn't make her laugh, there's no way she'd stay with me. There's no way she'd put up with my crap.
The only thing I wonder is if raising kids in a sarcastic environment is detrimental.
Now, no, definitely not.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. And next phase. No, but
as if I'm the expert.
I mean, we're like I said, we're dry, you know, we're sarcastic. We're, and you know, I mean, if my kids grow up like that, that's fine. But I got one kid who's really funny, and my other one is, you're funny too, dude. But he's a little more serious.
My 11-year-old daughter is convinced she's the funniest person in the house. Yeah. Like, really, she believes it, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way she's funnier than me.
But exactly. And if you are, I'm beating you down.
Exactly. But no, dude, funny is like super important.
Yeah. You know what? I started this business. As I told you, I was in advertising. I don't take anything serious. I take our product seriously, but I do all the copy for our website and our packaging.
That's why
and
you
whatnot.
Should be doing your Instagram.
There is nothing but, and like I said, it's wordy. People tease me all the time. Because what you were looking at some boxes now, and they're designed like a cereal box. Because when I was a kid, right, you're sitting there eating and you're turning the box around. So I wanted each panel to tell a story. And like, if you can read it, and it's not like ha ha humorous, but it's not like, oh, I'm Procter and Gamble toothpaste and blah blah blah. I mean, it's like everything's written with a little bit of sarcasm or
What is this? What is this mascot?
Right. I mean, he's just a character that we came up with. He's on the other side also.
Does he have a name?
Lorenzo.
Okay.
Zoe, the lizard.
Okay.
And what's interesting is a lot of products have lizards. It's really funny how that, you know, so it's not so much because he's a lizard, but he's actually sort of like the lovable loser, not loser bad, but like he thinks he's a lot cooler than he is.
Okay.
And so we've got, like, I've written a couple of ads, but you know, we're a small company, so like I'm putting out advertisements, but you know, he's always sort of the, you know, the stooge in the ads that we've written. So,
right. Well, now I feel like I should read some of this copy because we've talked about it. Which side would you prefer I read? Is this the funny-ish one? Or?
No, but that's like our story. I guess part of what I think is funny is that it is so wordy and it's very J. Peterman-like, you know, from Seinfeld, which right. It's like, well, it's so flowery and so silly, or not silly, but I don't even know what you call it.
I'm saying it would go without saying that you were a Mad Men fan.
You know, it's funny. I haven't watched it. I like the concept, but you know, there's so many fucking things. I just finished watching one. It's exhausting. First of all, have you seen, which I still think is probably the best TV, something on TV ever, which was Breaking Bad. Did you watch Breaking Bad?
I just finished my second time through.
Okay, so. And that's exhaustive. I mean, that is like a fucking marathon. And it would be 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to get up for work.
But let's talk about that for a minute, by the way. Because, by the way, we're probably into two-parter land with you now because we still haven't even, like, touched your company and I want to get something about
okay.
it. Unless one of us gets bored or you want to leave. But here's why Sopranos and The Wire are still, to me, the greatest.
Right, ever. Sopranos is good. But I think Breaking Bad was better.
So here's the thing.
They're coming out with a movie also. They're doing
Breaking Bad?
No, they're doing a pre-Soprano. So whatever the guy's name
not.
Is. Yeah, they're doing sort of the lead up, I believe.
I do not believe you. No way.
Yeah.
No fucking way.
Anyway, finish your story.
Well, we can Google it and there's no way they're doing it.
Yeah, you check. What's his name? Dave, who's the guy?
I just think he wouldn't touch it. Like, he was so happy to be done with it.
That's why it was such big news. I'm telling you, he's coming out with a nut.
But I heard Ferris Bueller 2 was coming out for the last 30 years.
Yeah, well, that's, you can't do that.
Anyway. All right, but let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's hard to remember is in context, right? Because when these shows break ground, 20 years later, you kind of can't tell anymore because that ground has been trampled on, essentially. So, you know, every week to be dying to wait for that episode to come up was so huge.
Right? Oh, you watch Breaking Bad on TV?
No. Sopranos I did.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day.
Sure.
And so it was like, you know, appointment television. You could not wait for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then I've gone back multiple times now. First time I went through was when Netflix was still CDs and we could time it right so that we would always have the new one because, like, you'd order two and then watch a few episodes. But anyway, so I went back through Breaking Bad and I cared very little until the very end about Hank and Marie. I found every scene with them I wanted to skip through the second time.
She was almost the reason why I stopped watching the show.
Right.
I found her to be so fucking annoying as a character. Like,
well, she's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to hate this nagging purple woman.
Yeah, right.
But I just didn't care. Like, the stakes, it was just like, why do I care about these two people? Until finally, at the end, when, like, you know, Hank gets his whatever, spoiler alert, now you're fucking devastated, right? But that's why, to me, it doesn't hold up, because I've never wanted to fast forward through any scene in The Sopranos.
You know, look, they're great ensemble character, you know, programs. The beauty of Breaking Bad for me was not, like, I spoke to a buddy who watched it on TV. I came in late to the game, and part of what got me there was that my wife started watching, you know, or binge watching, and be like, "Where are you, babe?"
Right.
Oh, I'm watching something. Well, now I'm by myself. It's almost like being a golf widow, I guess. You know, she's a fucking watching TV in the other room, and it's generally something I don't want to watch. So I'm like, "Well, fuck it. If she's doing that, I'm going to watch Breaking Bad." I didn't even know what it was. I mean, I knew there was this show called Breaking Bad. I didn't know it was about meth. I didn't know it was about like, after the first time, I'm like, holy fuck. And now I'm nowhere to be found for, you know, weeks on end. It seems like I come out, I've got like a freaking long beard. No.
But going back to Mad Men, I watched it as it came out. So that I watched straight through as it came out. I don't know if I can go back through now, but the characters are amazing. The story's amazing. And if you're in that world, it's like even better. And I wouldn't say jokes that you get, but just a way of being that if you've ever been in any kind of marketing or sales, you've had those problems. And you're like, oh, yeah, that fucking client. I've had that fucking guy.
Right. So you made reference to Glenn Ross, even though it's as, you know, dark a movie as you can get. I mean, it's a salesman. I have been You know, I sold Bose stereo equipment door to door. That was another one of my sales things. I mean, literally, hey, can I come sell you a stereo? No.
I can't meet a Patel without having these thoughts, right? And they're, you know, if you meet an Indian person, the odds that their name Patel is going to be right. pretty high. But in my mind, I cannot help think of that and being a salesman and that being true, right? Yeah.
Well, so I would go in these
doctors and Indians.
Well, I would go in these rooms, and they would, you know, hammer you with ways to sell, and you had, you know, and so Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, a great movie, but you know, it's hard to watch, you know, because of it is so real, you know, I mean, so true. But the thing about Breaking Bad, real quick, and then we can move on, is that what was cool is that it went from episode to episode to episode, and Netflix just gives you 8 seconds to turn it off, so you're in the next one. I couldn't tell whether I had finished two and went into the third episode. You know, I mean, when you can watch something seamless like that, it becomes a lot more enjoyable.
And here's what's really great is that shows now say skip intro, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You get 30 seconds of your minute of your life back. Now, Breaking Bad, it was only 10 seconds anyway, so you can deal with it, right? Bow, bow, bow. Yeah. But like other shows that you enjoy, and you're like, skip.
Did you ever watch True Blood?
Wait a minute, is it the vampire one?
Yeah.
No.
I'm not a vampire person, but I did watch all six years of it. And the intro to that had just some weird shit, like disturbing stuff. And sometimes when things go so fast, it actually, you know, becomes more ingrained in your, and so I'm like, skip it, you know, like I can watch whatever weird shit or sex or whatever, but I don't want to see like the mutated monkey picture for, you know, a fraction of a second. So, you know, we just.
The really good shows, it is part of the ritual, right? So obviously Sopranos is one.
Well, that's a great song too.
Right. But it's not just the song, but it's watching Tony like do that thing and seeing Satriali's and seeing he goes to his house. And then like, I can't think of it. What was the one where the family owned the funeral home?
Oh, that was great too, 6 Feet Under.
So I've seen that. We've gone that through a couple times.
That's a great show.
A cool intro.
Yeah.
So you kind of went through the whole.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's hard to put in context now because, you know, like I said, it's been 20 years. So many shows have done that. But at the time, you're like, holy fuck, this shit's amazing. Like, I couldn't wait for 6 Feet Under.
Yeah. No, like, that was a great show. Did you ever see the movie American Beauty? Which was also Alan Ball.
Yes.
That was a good movie.
Yes.
Everybody's
seen American Beauty. Nobody's not seen American Beauty.
Okay, good. Good. Then we can move on.
It's kind of like saying, have you seen this thing called Star Wars? Yeah.
Well, I'll put Mad Men then on my radar. I just watched The Killing, which was okay.
Ran out of steam.
What's that?
Ran out of steam.
Yes. Yeah. A little bit. But, you know, I had so much time invested in it that I couldn't stop it.
Right. But here's what's great. There's a lot of The Killings out there. These two and three season murder in a small town things. Most of them are British. You should watch all of those. They're all good.
Well, I will tell you this. So if Breaking Bad or Sopranos are at the top, the I really believe probably the best, if you want to call it a mini series, 8, 9 episodes, was True Detective, the first True Detective with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Fucking, I did watch that one again in like 3 days. I mean, you know, just all the way through.
Everyone told me the second season sucked, so I stopped.
I liked it. I mean, it was good. It just wasn't the first. Sometimes when you fucking pump one out that's so great, you know, that it's hard to match.
I thought, we just went back and watched Nurse Jackie. That's a pretty good one.
Oh, that's so, I lost my wife to that one. I mean, she was gone for however long, you know, watching Nurse Jackie. And the problem is if we both get into it, well, then the kids get neglected. You know, dinner's in the fridge. Dad, it's been 3 days. Eat it anyway. You know, really. So we can't both do. But I'll go back and watch Mad Men.
But so watch Mad Men, and then watch. So in The Killing, there's after that. Like I said, there's a bunch that are sort of in that genre that usually Netflix. So Broadchurch is one. Happy Valley is another. I can't think of the other ones. I'll text you later when I think of them.
Yeah.
But Netflix will start suggesting them, and most of them are only like 2, maybe 3 seasons, so you can kind of buzz through pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, Ozark, did you see the first
season? Oh, yeah.
That was great.
That's a winner. Ozark.
And you know what's good? Again, it's 10 seasons, you're in and out. I mean, 10 episodes, you're in and out. So now the second one's coming out.
Should we even fucking talk about iced tea or coffee? Do you care?
It's totally up to you, but it's a good product, so maybe we throw something out. But
No, listen. So I found you because of your Instagram feed, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so you like taking pictures, you like writing copy. It's like, duh, dude, you got to do Instagram posts.
Yeah, well, right. I probably should. I just figured out how to post a picture on Instagram, like right from taking it and posting it. What I really try to figure out, because I was, is how many hashtags, how many @s do you put? I mean, you know, I'll see someone will have a picture. It's like, I'm like, what the fuck, man? I can't read all that shit.
But just like every shitty ad or infomercial or anything, it doesn't mean all advertising sucks.
Oh, no. But I have to learn. You have to learn how to do it.
Right.
I think.
But it's like, I'm trying to think of what it's like learning. I don't know anything where once you kind of get this sort of basic, which there's not a lot to, then you can kind of add from there. So I've grown an entire business. Okay, my obstacle world. Do you know anything about that?
Obstacle world?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Obstacle world?
So it's called Obstacle Racing Media.
Well, I read the shirt when we came in, but right. I didn't know what it was.
So I created that business through social media.
Okay.
Right? Like I started writing about this thing that I thought was cool. Not even that I thought was going to be a business. Like, I like this stuff, it seems fun, and I happened to be right place, right time, and I did what you're supposed to do, which is a lot of content and be consistent. Consistent quality content, that's the name of the game.
Sure.
So pretty soon I became the expert and it became a business. Now, I still don't know like a tenth of what anybody on stage talking about social media talks about, and certainly not the latest things, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, because there's just sort of a basic. So hashtag culture is, there's 5 or 10 things, 15 things that would make sense for you to post about. And then other times you just sneak a few in there. And then sometimes you just put things in there because they're funny, which again, you already are. So I feel like it's a very natural thing for you.
Maybe my next progression. You know, it's funny. I posted something on Instagram and I don't know whether likes or follows or whatever, dictate whether it's a quality shot or not. But I put a picture of a guy wearing one of our swaggy, t-shirts.
Right.
And you didn't even see his face. It's just kind of his chin down, to his waist. And it's, cool swag by the pool, whatever it is. And then, like my last hashtag was, hashtag, does this shirt make me look thin? Like, I thought that was funny. I don't know, but we're not getting a ton of hits on it, but which I don't care.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Because like you can hashtag, does this shirt make me look thin? Doesn't go anywhere. I mean, there's not like a,
right.
30,000.
I just thought
it was funny.
But here's what people try to do, which is not a good idea. And that's like, they want to create their own trending hashtags. And that's not the move because you're not going to do it.
Right.
It's like, I can't think of an example, but it's like, you're not
going to. If I see hashtag wet t-shirt, I'm clicking on it.
There you go. But there are things, and I don't know what they are, but other than, I'm guessing things like coffee time, but first coffee, like, there's a, right?
Yeah.
And then, again, it depends on what the post is. So like when I do this show, right, I have 10 standard ones that I do for the Atlanta podcast, Atlanta, ATL, I Love ATL podcast, blah, blah, blah. And then for you, I'm going to do those things. I'm going to do coffee. Now I might get 2 followers that happen to follow that hashtag that day, that minute. It doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
It's just, again, it's like, but
it's
again,
content. You need content. That's
right. But it's again, it's like, it's about building a lifetime thing.
Yeah.
Right. But in your world, so this is good to talk about. You're not, you're B2B, right? You're not trying to hit the end consumer. You want restaurants to buy your shit.
Well, yes. Yes, I do now.
By the way, why aren't we drinking this now? We should be drinking this during the show.
Wait, dude. I mean, my cup is empty here, but I didn't want to be rude and stop the...
Well, why don't we do that? I think we should.
Okay.
This is real time, folks. We're going to stop, and I'm going to brew this because we have the stupid machines.
Yep, let's do it.
All right, so we're now drinking coffee and tea.
Yeah.
Because why not get fucking jacked up? This is my only vice left, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore.
Yeah,
I don't like internet porn. I got no vices left except caffeine.
Dude, if you don't do internet porn, no.
But this is why you should listen to Chris Rock's special, by the way, because like nobody really talks about that, and he gets pretty real about it. It's good shit, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, as I say, I don't trust anyone who hasn't ever had a drink. I don't trust a man who tells me they haven't looked at internet porn because
right. Well, of course.
It's too easy. It's pervasive. It's insidious.
Right. Yes.
I can't help myself. No. Anyway, go on. Let's
check. Who can really?
Right.
All right, so let's talk about sweet tea first.
Okay.
I grew up in the South,
mm-hmm.
where sweet tea is water, right? Go to a restaurant, give me tea,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And usually the sweeter the better, right? Which my wife cannot stand.
Yeah.
She's sophisticated. She's from San Francisco. She thinks it's disgusting.
I'm not a sweet tea drinker, but I'm not going to hold that against you.
Well, you're aware of the culture down here.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So if I go to, say, Wendy's mm-hmm. or Chick-fil-A, right? He is now shaking it as if it's a fine glass of wine. Or Chick-fil-A, and I get the super duper sweet tea. If I go to a restaurant and I say, do you have tea? Like if I'm in, say, the North, they're like, do you mean hot tea?
Yeah.
Right? Or they'll say, we have tea and it's unsweetened. And usually I say, you can't really get it to where you can get it. Right? But I think my palate has matured as I've gotten older. I think as a kid, I couldn't do it. But now, like, oh, we have some simple syrup. I'll put a little bit in there. Anyhow, where are you in that world of selling to people in restaurants in this culture of fucking disgustingly sugary sweet shit? was that a straight enough question?
Yeah. It's straight enough, and I actually have an answer.
Good. I'm enjoying this coffee too, by the way.
Good, thank you.
And we're gonna be fucking like, let's fucking hit the strip club or something.
Right. This and Adderall, and you're good for the day. Mm-hmm. I used to have a friend who called it a hippie highball. He'd wake up in the morning, take a bong hit, and have a shot of espresso, and go to work. That was like, okay.
sounds like a redneck highball.
So as far as the sweet tea, and it's funny because I drink the tea and I tasted it and created the blend as an unsweetened product. But obviously, as you just said, we're in the South. So what was bothering me is that I would sell, as we sell into restaurants, and you make sweet tea. It's funny, I'll never forget. I had a guy from upstate New York call, must have found us online. And he called and he goes, listen, I need you to send me, or I'd like for you to send me a box of sweet tea. I go, sir, you don't understand. I send you the tea and you sweeten it, to your point. And he goes, no, I need sweet tea for my customers. I go, sir. Anyway, what we ultimately created was a simple syrup pitcher. Again, I don't feel like it's the first ever, but inevitably we took a what's a beer pitcher, and we had them printed with a line, and it's got, you know, fill sugar to here, and then hot water stir, till you have liquid to here, and then you pour that into the unsweetened tea. So ideally, you should have the same sweetness at every restaurant that we sell our product in. Unfortunately, it's hard to make people do what they're told. In other words, our product, once we sort of release it into the world, it could be the best coffee in the world. It could be the greatest iced tea in the world, but I'm not there brewing it. So I've given them a device to make a consistent sweet tea that to me is actually not too sweet. So you still taste the tea and hopefully you'll get, people will go, God, this is some damn good sweet tea. Not, holy shit, this is so sugary, my spoon is, you know, standing still in the middle. So that's what we've done. I've created a calibrated simple syrup pitcher that will allow the right amount of sweetness and the right amount of tea flavor to come through.
Now, as we...
I hope that doesn't make me sound like a tea asshole, but that's sort
of... Does not make you sound like a tea asshole. When you sniffed the cup as if it was fine wine, that made you look like a tea asshole.
Right.
But...
I wasn't sniffing it. I just like the sound effects. I've got a microphone stuck to my chest, so I was just...
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. I like to do this. Always annoys people. It's going to sound like shit. Somebody's on their run. Like, what the fuck is that? So for a man who's not a scientist, who doesn't even know how much caffeine is in a cup of coffee versus a cup of tea, how did you become... I imagine you in a lab, much like your buddy Walt White.
Yep.
You're in a lab. You've got a coat. You're stirring things. You've got beakers. Is that what the process was like?
And a mask. The mask was key. So
I saw myself as more of a Jesse.
You know, I think he was probably the best. Honestly, he was the best character in the whole show, I think. Because Walt was sort of, I don't mean to digress, but
we should digress.
He was sort of like, I mean, he was such a dick, but I couldn't help liking him. I don't know why.
But see, again, here's a distinction. You rooted for Tony Soprano. You did want Walt to die. That's what I feel like the distinction is. I did want, especially...
Yeah, but he sort of died a hero. That was sort of...
But that's the thing. Again, like Tony, horrible human being, right? But you rooted for him. Walt, once Mike is dead, and certainly when Hank is dead, you're like, well, fuck this fucking guy.
Yeah.
Right? And then he gives up Jesse, right? Like, Hank's dead, you're like, oh my God. Then he fucking gives up Jesse, you're like, fuck this motherfucker.
Yeah.
But because we got to see the happy ending of killing all the other bad guys, it sort of redeemed him.
Yeah.
But to me, that's why there's a distinction. You're saying, no, you still rooted for Hank. I mean, for Walter.
No. I found him to be a compelling character. And but I was excited to see Jesse live, but there's no way that, I mean, if you saw that to me was sort of that brilliant ending where his face was just, manically smiling. I mean, he'd seen all of the women that he loved in his life shot down. And anyway, so getting back to the tea and the blending and whatnot, it wasn't a lab coat, and I rely a lot on my palate. So it's really a matter of a little of this and a little of that. Try it, you know, probably no different than a chef that would create a recipe and hope that they can duplicate it. So really what has allowed us to grow the brand is our ability to consistently blend and hit our flavor profiles. I don't know if that answers your question, it was trial and error until.
No, it does. And let's talk, Lake House Coffee, which, forget the picture, right? Let's just like think from my brain, if I think Lake House. So it's like a Sunday morning, right?
Uh-huh.
And like the sun's coming up and it's lake and it's nature, so it's chilled and I'm away from the hustle bustle of the day, right?
Yep.
And then Blue Durango.
Dude, you need to write copy for me. That's awesome.
Well, I'm getting there. So Blue Durango, right? Southwest, a little bit cooler, right? Iced tea. Like, so you're like imagery is like clearly like a very important part for you.
It is. It is because our objective was really to create a lifestyle brand that, again, hopefully would have some legs outside of the whole B2B concept, which is really, you know, where we started. The imagery is, to me, the only reason why to do this. I mean, if everybody had black sneakers and that was all we had, then Nike wouldn't be where they are.
Right.
So imagery is very important, and I think it's a distinction.
So lesson for or not for our young listeners or our young or old entrepreneurs, how much do you sweat initial product name and initial product branding or any boxes that come out? Do you sweat every fucking detail or do you get an idea and go, let's go with it?
I think I sweat every detail.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read the stuff on our box, again, the word process comes up a couple of times. And I love the process. It would be like, what's a goal in my life? I'd love to build a house. You know why? Because it'd probably be a fucking pain in the ass, but I love the process of, as we've talked about long division, it's just the building blocks. And if it were as easy as just coming up with something and rolling with it, which sometimes it may happen, then I'm almost reluctant to say that that's the right thing. I mean, I'll give you a quick story about how Lake House Coffee came about. I had done all the marketing research myself. I came up with a list of 27 names, and I carried this list, a stack of papers. If I saw you in a pizza joint or a Taqueria del Sol, and I'd say, hey man, do me a favor, just read this real quick and give me check marks on three of them. And I did that for months, and I whittled it all the way down till I got three names that was going to be the name of our...
What was this coffee almost called?
One of them was Strum Casey, which was sort of guitar, you know, music reference. One was, we're almost 25 years old, so my memory's not so great. One of them may have been Crosstown, there was a Hendrix reference somewhere.
Crosstown Traffic Coffee.
Yeah, so, well, it didn't have the traffic, but Crossroads maybe, and then that's kind of got a negative connotation, but I keep all this shit, so I could go back and next time we talk, we'll have done my homework. But inevitably, my parents were actually trying to build a lake house. You know, they're now older, and it was their opportunity to get away. And I'm telling you, all they did was fight about how to get this thing to happen. And I sat there one day, I go, Jesus, what is the reason for you even building a lake house? It's to, you know, relax. It's to enjoy the spoils of your life and blah, blah. I go, I'm going to have a lake house before you guys do. And I went, lake house? What? I go, that's the fucking name, Lake House Coffee. So that happened sort of quickly. I mean, it went from months of research to throwing away everything. And then 2 seconds, I had a name. And then it was... to sort of create this, as you said, this feeling. It's funny, this writing has actually stayed through, and just to read the first line, it says, just after the first ripple of dawn laps at the shore of your cabin. You know, so again, little Jay Peterman, but the idea was that I'm trying to create a feeling that most coffee is, you know, jittery and, you know, get jacked up. And our customers were, you know, white tablecloth, chef-driven restaurants. And I didn't think they were looking for that you know, speedy type thing. It was really more of an austere, you know, kind of feeling, evoking concept. So that's how it came about. And what's really been interesting is that there's an entire lake community that I never even thought about. Again, I wish I could tell you I was, you know, this genius marketer. But, I mean, out of the woodworks, I'd have a guy call me from California. He's like, I need to buy 2 t-shirts and send a pound of coffee to my parents. I'm like, where? They're like, oh, they've got a lake house in Minnesota. And I think it'd be a cool, you know, thing for me to... I had one person, a woman call. She goes, I need 12 mugs. I go, 12 mugs? I've never sold that many before. You know, I go, what are you going to do with that? She goes, well, my husband and I have a lake house, and we've got these big 17-ounce mugs. And she goes, and when people come, you know, to our place, I want them to drink out of a mug that says Lake House Coffee. I'm like, fuck, I wish I were smarter than I was, because, you know, I could. And so we actually created, which it's hard, apparel is a tough thing. But we created something called Lake House Dry Goods. And if you've seen Salt Life stickers on the back of cars, obviously Life is Good, you know, $1 million brand. And we were going to really push out this whole lake experience. And in fact, the tagline was, copyright, escape the noise. And it's tough getting apparel out.
Well, so, but I was going to say.
As a brand, that is.
But in 2018, it's all, I can't think of the word, it's all fucking
virtual.
Well, third party. You don't need a fucking factory, man. There are so many companies that you give them your copy and you give them your sweet logos and it doesn't cost you a fucking, you know what I mean? Like, so now, I don't know when you launched it, but yeah. But I'm not saying it's easy to make money doing it, but I'm saying...
You know what the difficulty is? Maybe we'll revisit it, but at the time it was, you know, I've got to have women's apparel, small, medium, and large.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You don't have to do that anymore. There are so many companies. I mean, we can talk afterwards, but I'm trying to think of the one...
Well, there's Cafe Press. There's
the Cafe Press is, I think, the shitty one, though. Yeah, yeah. Like, there's some good ones that you don't have to ever make anything. They can buy one shirt or they can make 100 shirts. And it all, like, they just send you the fucking check every month, right? Or the automatic deposit every month, because a shirt costs $17. You're only going to make 6 on it or whatever it is. But the machine, again, it's that residual income. And then if any one of them becomes like a hit, you can talk about, you know, well, let's promote this one through Instagram more or whatever. Yeah. But I think, yeah, because again, that's like an accidental thing. Are your Instagram people using the word hashtag lakehouse?
I hope they are.
Okay. Well, listen... Person who's listening who also tweeted back at me earlier today, start using not hashtag Lakehouse Coffee because no one cares about your company yet, but just hashtag Lakehouse because clearly people who like to spend time on lakes think it's cool. And like, right, they think it's their little brand. Like, I didn't think of it either. Yeah, dude, it's funny. I've launched a few companies and the names always come to me right away. But I do, when I write the show notes to this thing, that's the part that kills me because it's the stupidest thing. It's like, we talked about blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's a run-on. We talked about blah, blah, blah. We also talked about blah, blah, blah. We also, do I want to say also twice? Like, that's the shit that I fucking go nuts over.
Yeah.
Then it can take me an hour to write what ends up being 3 sentences because I just beat myself up over the that.
Well, it's like writing a joke, though. I don't know. How long does it take you to write a joke?
Oh, but that's a whole, whole nother.
Okay.
That's a whole nother. there are people who write jokes that there's a science to it. Did you ever listen to Mark Maron? He's one of the better podcast interviewers.
No.
So Maron interviews a lot of comics, and there are guys that it literally becomes a science. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they figure that math sort of out. And then there's like the most amazing storytellers ever out there. Like to me, like the Chappelles of the world or the Carlins of the world, because they can go in and out, and like 20 minutes later, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Anyway, I never was that good either way. And I never committed to it like I commit to this, which is, again, a whole other topic about business. I never treated my comedy like a business, which the smart people do. Even before being your own brand was a thing, if you were smart and you fucking hustled, you figured out. I was like every broke comic musician, whatever, that was like too focused on getting laid and complaining about why that guy got the gig and I didn't.
Yeah. As soon as you get out of that mode, I think you... You change.
I hit that at 35 when I started my first business instead of like 25, which is why I'm envious. But it's stupid. It's like your life is your life. You get there when you get there.
I don't have any regrets. It's interesting though, the Blue Durango name, that came kind of quickly. We're not even close to what the original logo was, but my objective was, you know, dusty Western town, tumbleweeds, and the idea was I've got a product that's going to quench your thirst. And so again, the imagery there was, you know, dry and whatnot, and I just used the word blue because I thought, well, blue sounds cool. I mean, it sounds, and it's funny because after I came up with this and then I started doing research, it was like, and again, I think you can throw out a lot of research that was done in the past, but it's like adults don't like the color blue. Ugh. You know, kids do because when they eat a piece of candy, you know, when their mouth turns blue, it's the coolest thing. But you know, but now you go and you've got blue Powerade and blue, you know. I mean, so color really is, it almost needs to be color. So, Blue Durango, it just sort of rolled off my tongue, and that's how it started. I mean, that one came out kind of easily. And the funny thing is, I'll never forget that when I happened to answer the phone, somebody was calling to place an order, and I go, yeah, I'd like 3 boxes of Blue Durango. And I'm like, pause a second, because it was brand new. I was like, fuck, I don't even recognize the name. I mean, and I'm like, holy shit, I just came up with something out of the back of my head, and somebody called and ordered it by name. I was like, oh my God, that's cool. So anyway, so yeah, this one was a little easier than the Lake House, but nonetheless.
All right. Are you ready to take the Atlanta podcast quiz?
Sure.
Which, it depends what episode you listen to. We didn't do it for Anna because she lives in LA, but I don't know if you've heard it on, if you've made it through the end of any previous episodes, but it's pretty complicated.
Okay, let's do it.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What's your to-go order at the Waffle House?
To-go order?
No, not to-go, but like
your go-to
order.
Yeah. I'm a smothered, covered, chunked hash brown and a waffle, which is pretty traditional, but that's my go-to.
Right, so chunked is ham. I always like to explain it.
No. What's the one with tomato?
Tomato is topped.
No, that's diced.
Diced is tomatoes.
Covered, yes. Smothered, covered.
Diced is definitely tomatoes. Capped is mushrooms. Chunked is ham.
No, which is the one with onions? No.
Onions is smothered, covered.
So, okay, that's it. So, yeah, and tomatoes. No ham. Tomato.
No.
Not because I'm Jewish, but just because I don't do the ham in there.
Right. Dude, how retarded is that? By the way, you can't say retarded in 2018.
Yeah.
Like, to go to somebody's
house. How mentally challenged?
To go to somebody's house and they're like, do you eat ham? I'm like, you fucking please.
Yeah.
Right?
I believe, I think kosher is completely antiquated as a concept. And so now if anybody is kosher, you know, sorry, any Orthodox Jews that are listening, but... you know, it was a health thing way back when, and now, you know, I'm not concerned with
tricking. I'm not saying it's bad to be kosher. I'm just saying, like, to ask a Jewish person, it's like, is every black person a Muslim? Anyhow, what is your favorite restaurant in Atlanta? And there might be, I don't know if you have clients and you can't or can say, but...
I would say, how about, let's say, what's a consistent restaurant?
Sure.
Soto Soto is always a good get.
Soto Soto is my wife and I's probably favorite. We go there on anniversaries and whatnot, right here around the corner.
So, you know, here's a better question. What is your favorite restaurant? Whichever one my wife likes, you know.
Right.
But she's a huge Soto Soto fan. So that's
my wife is also used to, but I like that spot a lot.
Yeah. And it's cool space.
Right. What is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
I would probably say the Dogwood Festival because it birthed the shit in the bag theory. The shit in the bag theory, and I think it really can go for anything. So one year we were doing we had a smoothie and hot chocolate booth. We weren't even doing coffee. We were doing smoothies and hot chocolate. And it was hot chocolate in the morning because all the festival goers were setting up and it was still cool in the spring. And then in the afternoon, we were selling smoothies. Well, we were selling smoothies so quickly and we had these Taylor, you know, soft serve type machines. And once we ran out of one flavor, we would have to put in another. And sometimes we had to put in another flavor while the other flavor was still there so it would get cold. So it went from, if you're getting strawberry, it's red, and mango, it's orange, and we put in, you know, blackberry. It became shit colored. It was disgusting looking. But you know what? Nobody cared. As long as it was cold and sweet, and my comment sort of was, we could put shit in here and people would order it. So that became the shit in the bag theory because nobody cared what it looked like. They just wanted it. So,
what were you selling?
Smoothies.
But why were you selling smoothies?
Because that's what they wanted. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, I got to go where the money is. No.
So you didn't have a tea company?
No, I didn't have tea. No, this was a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I had, you know what? They wanted a vendor. I was the vendor. Whatever they wanted, I was going to sell. So yeah, we did coffee and hot chocolate early, and then it was smoothies. So anyway, but Dogwood Festival's, you know, pretty special.
Okay, rank these in importance to you.
Okay.
Okay, Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United.
I would say Falcons, Braves, United, Hawks. United just because I think it's truly, it's brought together a city. And if you've been to a game, it's pretty damn fun. And it's interactive, if you will. But I'm a huge football fan, and I have Braves tickets, so.
Are you in stadiums?
We're actually the coffee and tea at Molly B's, which is kind of cool because we are literally the only outside vendor in the entire Mercedes-Benz stadium, meaning that everything else is done by contract. And the people that are running Molly B's wanted Lake House Coffee and Blue Durango iced tea. So we're in that stadium.
What is Molly B's?
Molly B's is Arthur Blank's steakhouse in the stadium.
Does he have a kid named Molly or what?
He has a mother named Molly.
Okay.
His mother's name is Molly.
What is the best show, like the best concert you saw in Atlanta? Who was it? Where was it?
Well, because it was the first, I'd have to say October 29th, maybe October 30th, 1985, Grateful Dead at the Fox. It was during exam time, and we basically blew off exams, jumped in a car. My buddies drove in from Vanderbilt, from Nashville. At Vanderbilt, we drove in from New Orleans. I swear we must have made it here in about 4.5 hours. It's 500 miles, so that was moving. We literally met them in the parking lot. Shit went down, whatever that may mean, in case my kids are listening. And it was a special event. So
I saw The Dead at the Omni, like 89 or 91. When did Touch of Grey come out?
I don't know, probably around that time. That was always the rights to spring because it was always that end of March, beginning of April.
Right. I was not a Dead fan. Someone said, you have to go to the show. I went. I still wasn't a fan of The Dead.
Yeah. It's got to grow on you. And I know a lot of people that are into music and they're not into The Dead. It's a happening. It's like, you know, I've got friends that love heavy metal. I mean, you know, I like some of them, but I don't listen to them.
Did you get on the post-Dead, like the Fish Train or the, who are the other bands that people follow?
Well, there's Widespread.
Widespread, Fish.
I like Widespread. I had seen Fish early, like I saw him when before it's the Buckhead, there was the Roxy, and then I'd seen him at Variety Playhouse and a couple other places, but no, not at the same level that I went with The Dead or followed The Dead or whatever. So probably not.
Who is the? This is the final question, by the way. Who?
How am I doing? Oh, good. No.
Who? You're passing.
Yeah, right.
You got it. 72 so yeah. Far. What? Who should I have next in the Atlanta podcast?
You know what would be interesting, because I'm meeting with these guys at the Claremont Lounge. We're gonna be one of the vendors for the new Claremont Lounge restaurant. And I mean, what if is Blondie still around? I mean, is that?
She's on the list. Like when I started the show,
yeah.
Like Blondie, Baton Bob, like all the sort of random Atlanta people. I haven't reached out. I did reach out to Baton Bob, have not heard back, but I should reach out to Blondie because she's definitely on the list.
Only because like I told somebody that I said, yeah, I've got a meeting down at the new Claremont Lounge, and everyone's like, oh, Blondie. You know, I mean, it's just like, it just comes out. You know, I mean, it's just I don't know if she's around. I don't know if she's a good interview, but she's an icon at that
Well,
level.
Here's the question. What I didn't know there... Because I know they closed the hotel, mm-hmm. right? The in front, the Claremont Motor Lodge, whatever it was called. But the club itself has still been open this whole time, hasn't it?
No, I think that it's the people who bought it or they've redone the hotel, so it'll be like a boutique, micro boutique hotel, and they've got a chef driven restaurant in the front. So to the I'll know tomorrow Friday. I'm going down on Friday. So to the extent that there is still a club, not a strip club, but a club, I don't know.
But I think I feel like more people would know about it if they actually closed the actual Claremont Lounge.
I don't know.
We'll after we get off the phone, we'll Google that. Yeah. And this bullshit.
Shit, does that bring me down to an 87?
And this bullshit that you said that they're making a Sopranos movie, which I don't believe.
That what's the guy's? Is it David? David Lynch? Not David Lynch. That was that was Twin Peaks.
He is Twin Peaks and a lot of other things.
But, what was his name? He was good. He was a good writer.
I know, but it David, whatever his name is.
Yeah. Chase? Maybe David Chase. I think it is David Chase.
But I can say this has been very enjoyable, and I hope we can, chat some more.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I appreciate you allowing me to speak freely, and make some mistakes and hopefully turn some people on. I'm looking up Sopranos now, but I don't have my glasses on, so you have to tell me.
All right, here we go. But moment of truth.
I think. I don't even know if I spelled it right.
First of all, you spelled it
wrong. Yeah, that's what I said. I don't have my glasses on.
And it's probably looking for a signal.
Yeah, well,
so let's change. Well, now you've done it. I mean, I was going to wait, but now you've done it. I'm on a signal here because I work here. You know what? I should play the music like as the outro.
Yeah, I mean... You know what? I will tell you, we talked about intros to shows and whatnot. If you're in the other room, you know, and my wife's got the TV going, I mean, it's an instant get your ass on the couch sound. You know what I mean? Once you start hearing that, it really brings you in at that moment.
Right. Cast of characters, episodes, reception, effect, and legacy, home video releases. There's no, let's see if the end it would say like, hey, they're going to watch a movie.
You look it up. I'm telling you, he's doing a prequel to The
Sopranos.
Okay,
let's look up Sopranos prequel, and I'm going to shut you down right now that this is a fucking rumor. Sopranos prequel.
A movie. It's a movie, not a HBO series.
David Chase hints at a Sopranos prequel. That's the headline from Esquire. Let's see the date on this puppy. If it's for 2017 or older, then you're done. November 26th, 2014.
So somebody must have picked it up and ran with it, but because so I'm not reading old news.
But again, like this would be such bigger news, and I don't even I don't watch the news, and I basically I don't know most things, but that would be news that I would know.
Yeah. And listen, if nothing else, it took up a couple of minutes on the show and
on this fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, dude, we're gonna end there.
Yeah.
Alrighty, Lake House Coffee, Jonathan Silver, thank you so much for tuning in. A reminder, patreon.com/theatlantapodcast. You can also follow us on social media, ATL Podcast, and Instagram is where I do most of the stuff. Personally, I'm at Matt B. Davis on most everything in the world. You can also leave a review on iTunes. Hope you are well. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run.